Finance, Personnel, and Audit Committee meeting will come to order. Madam Clerk, will you take the roll?
Just make sure you have your speakers on, Supervisors. Supervisor Hoff.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
Commonwealth.
Excuse.
Griffith.
Here.
Zipska.
Here.
Alexander.
Present.
Stanford.
Temporarily excused.
Johnson.
Here.
Here. Thank you. First item.
From the Office of the Comptroller, requesting approval of an initial authorizing resolution and final bond resolution for the issuance of a not to exceed amount of $36.1 million for various capital improvement projects included in the 2013 capital improvement budget and previously approved projects from 2011 and 2012.
Morning.
Good morning. The Comptroller's Office.
Please identify yourself.
Capital Finance Manager, Comptroller's Office. Comptroller's Office is requesting approval to issue not to exceed amount of $36.1 million.
Anybody here? No. Okay.
I'm trying not to be too close because of the. You can hear the. Can you? Is that better?
That's
okay.
Better.
You're here to request approval to issue not to exceed amount of $36.1 million in corporate purpose bonds.
Still a little hard to hear you, to be honest.
Okay.
With you.
I'm sorry.
Ready?
I don't know if it's.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you speak up or.
Is there a way to turn the volume up on the.
I'm trying to.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
There we go.
I feel like the phone is my cell phone. Here to request approval to issue $36.1 million as a not-to-exceed amount, delegating authority to the Comptroller for the issuance and approval based on a list of parameters that I'll go over. The corporate purpose issue for 2013 consists of projects from 2011 as well as the adopted capital improvement budget. The 2013 capital budget had $26.7 million in bonding, with a $2.9 million reallocated from approved project Moody Pool, and then $2 million for Moody Pool itself, the refurbishment, and then $3.8 million that was approved for various highway projects to get you to the $36.1 million not to exceed amount, and that amount also includes cost of issuance amounts. Supervisor, you had asked me about the $12,000. Basically, that rounding amount is to get to the thousands. The bonds are sold in lots of 5,000 and 25,000, so we have to put a rounding amount in there for that.
Move approval.
Did you want me to? I was going to go through the parameters,
but sure,
you want to move approval, that's perfectly fine. The parameters are maximum coupon rate of 5%, maximum interest cost of 4.5%, 10-year call, which is typical for the county's corporate purpose issues, and then a minimum price of 99%. We would come back to you with an informational report. The reason why we're doing the delegations is that based on the refunding that we did and the POB, we're able to take advantage of interest rates faster by doing a delegation, and we'd like to continue that practice. For example, coming before you after you've adopted the budget, asking for approval for the bond issues, and then coming back with informational reports on the issues. So regardless of the interest rate climate, we're seeing an advantage for the county of having that flexibility. So I just wanted to let you know that I'll be coming back to you continuing that practice. I did want to mention there's a section in the report that refers to the qualified energy conservation bonds. In 2010, the county had given the authority to issue those bonds. We did a $10 million amount. There was an allocation of 9.7. That amount is actually shared with the city. The city gets about 6.3. The county gets 3.6. So we would like to utilize the county's portion for this financing, and then also have discussions with the city to use theirs, because they haven't used theirs yet. What's appealing about that is the 70% reimbursement on the interest rate that we're trying to seek. So I just wanted to let you know we're trying to utilize that component.
Supervisor Drizik?
And that's actually the area I have some questions on, the qualified energy conservation bonds. Apparently the city of Milwaukee has the right to allocate part of that amount. And my question is, are they also going to control the use of those funds?
No, my understanding is they can, if they so choose, allow us to use that amount, but then once they do that, then that's the end of the commitment from them.
I would assume, and I mean, I may be before they have an opportunity to weigh in on that, but I'm going to assume that if they're going to be asked those questions, they're perhaps going to require that they be used for City of Milwaukee projects.
They very well may. Supervisor, what we're doing is just simply having a discussion with them to see if they're interested in doing that.
I do appreciate the fact that you're responding really to what supervisors asked you to respond to, and that is to get this bonding going very quickly because some of us are concerned about inflation and so on and the possibility of borrowing becoming more expensive going forward. But with regard to this piece, I guess I'm okay with doing the full borrowing, but I would expect we're going to have to revisit this if the City of Milwaukee comes forward with specifications on that amount. And I guess I'm just asking, are we clear on how we would proceed with that?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, right now you have some projects that are in your capital improvement budget that has been approved that would be eligible. Right now it's within the county's allocation. If it turns out that the City of Milwaukee is interested in allowing us to use the 6.3, we would come back and more than likely for other projects to include within that 6.3. So we would come back to you if that's allowable.
Well, let me ask it a different way. If we didn't include this allocation, which is potentially going to be controlled by the City of Milwaukee, would we be able to do a higher bonding amount today that the county completely controls?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, right now the only authorization we have is for projects that are approved. If we were to use the qualified energy conservation bonds for other projects, we would need to come back and get approval and then get authorization for a higher amount. Right now, we do not have that authorization, nor are we seeking right now a request for higher authorization on the bonds.
We approve certain capital projects in the budget, which require borrowing.
Yes.
Are we borrowing in this request for the purpose of doing those projects that were approved?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor,
yes. Have you reduced the amount of borrowing that we should be doing to include this allocation that potentially the City of Milwaukee might control?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, no.
Okay, that was the question I was trying to get. So
okay.
I assume we'll hear from you going forward if the City of Milwaukee does put some additional specifications in. So thank you, and I guess there's a motion already.
There's a motion. Supervisor.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that Ms. Bryant's always been very forthcoming. I think these are large matters for borrowing that we have. She's always available to help us in trying to understand these things. I think we've done a really good job. I have a question here too, but I think we've done a really good job on all the pension obligation bonds and all the bonding we've done. I think we've got good counsel here. And in that light, besides that compliment, is that we have to be on top of things and need explanations to understand this and make sure we're doing right. I have confidence in the comptroller has been a part of this. He has preliminary okay. He's recommending this. We have our underwriters here. So I'm just throwing out the point here, if the comptroller has anything to say about this or underwriters have anything to say to add to what your testimony was, I would encourage them to come up and do that. And the specific question I have, Ms. Brett, if you can answer this, is that I always look at the bottom and the financial notes at the end and how much it costs. You know, our underwriter costs in this situation at $36 million is $7 per 1,000 bond amount and $3 per bond amount for other costs. You previously talked about not to exceed, so are we in the parameters, or how does that change? I guess I'd like to look just a little explanation on that and make sure we're doing what we need to do in this area.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, and just a clarification, These are the financial advisors and bond counsel, not the underwriters. The underwriters are the ones that purchase the bonds, just for the sake of clarification. These are not to exceed amounts. We looked at what our prior financings were and tried to get some parameters. The corporate purpose issue will be bid, so what that cost of issuance as it relates to the underwriters will be determined by what the market conditions are on that date. So we're expecting the cost to be lower. $7 is higher than what we've been seeing. We've been seeing more in a $3 to $4 range, but we just wanted to have enough room because we're asking for permission before we actually issue, and we don't know where the amount is going to end, so we want to have enough cushion there.
And I guess I would make one more comment is that, you know, timing is so crucial on the market and stuff, too, here. And so we're you feel confident, and our comptroller feels confident we're getting the advice that we needed in our timing. Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, and the big difference is when we do these things, when we short sell, and a couple of things that you brought forward. And this is another situation, I think, that the timing is important. We're getting the biggest bang for a buck here in all of your opinions, which is the final question I am asking.
Scott Mansky, Comptroller from Milwaukee County. I do recommend that we go forward with this as the resolution has indicated. The county, by having done this and with the market changes that have been occurring out there, I think this allows us some of the timing that we need to do. I mean, the county just recently issued $135 million of debt to replace some 5-year notes that we had that were coming due at the end of this year. The county, that was taxable debt. The county ended up with a rate of approximately 3.28% for taxable debt. Everything seemed to work out on the day that we were doing. There was supposed to be a $1.2 billion issue for the state of Ohio on that day. That didn't occur. And so we were the only people in the market on that day for this taxable debt. The debt, when it did go out, our debt was 5 times oversold, so we were able to reduce the spreads that were there and able to get a taxable rate of 3.28%. We're working on a communication that will be coming to you, but to basically tell you what the overall pension obligation bond debt, but will be less than 6% for that. Our goal was 6.5% when we had done that back in 2009. And the overall debt, the $265 million plus the $135, with this 3.28%, we're going to be below 6%, which is extraordinary. But the timing and what we're allowed to do and what we're able to push for, we understand that we need to keep moving on things, and so that's why we're here today and making the recommendations so that we can look at what's happening in the marketplace.
Thank you. Any further questions on item one? Supervisor Lipton.
Thank you. Two things. So with regard to the call, the 10-year call provision, you had said, and I remember you telling us this before, that that was typical.
Mm-hmm.
But given where we think rates are, cost of issuance. Is there any reason to believe that we would invoke that, or could it go for the next 10 years that we're going to see better rates than this? So is there, if we were to waive that, would you pick up, how many basis points would you pick up if we just didn't have that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I actually would like to let the FA answer that question. I know we talked about that, and there didn't seem to be much of an advantage, but I'll let him elaborate.
I appreciate it.
And while he's coming up, just on the POB sale real quick, it was low interest rate environment that helped us with that, as well as paying off the debt quicker, so that the combination of those two. The original plan, we were looking at about $160 million in interest when we started out in 2009. Obviously, there's been a lot of activity since then in terms of the rates coming down, and we're at about $57 million in interest. So that's the difference between where we thought we were going to be in 2009 and where we were on last Thursday.
That's huge. Dave Anderson, Public Financial Management. Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, the market is for a 10-year call. That's a standard market throughout the country, throughout municipal bonds. And there's no advantage to not having a 10-year call. You don't pick up any basis points by foregoing that.
Okay. I appreciate that answer. And then with respect to the sort of how you the parameters that you've set for this, I'm still trying to understand that stuff, and sure. I won't ask you to explain it again today, but the expectation of how we set this up is that we're trying to get a premium paid, is that and to reduce the issuance amount, is that what how that's structured?
Is it a particular parameter that you're asking about?
Well, the combination of it. So that,
okay.
Perhaps that's a discussion. A lesson separate from here. All right. And then one other question about a note on the bottom of page 2. The final sentence says not to exceed amount of $36.1 million in 2013 bonds. Includes an estimated principal amount of $8.7 million.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I can explain that. That's dealing with the structure. The way the county, keep in mind, the $36.1 million, that $8.7 is inside of there. And what that is just reflecting is that when the county structures its debt, we have a number of projects that have a shorter term useful life. So you don't want to issue 14, 15-year term bonds for something that only has useful life for, say, 5 years or 3 years. So what we do is within that larger structure, I'll have debt service for a 5-year structure for shorter term issues like IT equipment, the fleet vehicles. Particularly for the fleet program, you have vehicles and equipment that's 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years. So the way I structure it is so that you have debt that's 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years, so that when those vehicles are sold, the debt service is gone, and then the proceeds can go to the department. Otherwise, if the debt is still outstanding, those proceeds have to go towards paying off the debt. So we structure it based on the useful life of the equipment.
That's why that amortization
yes.
schedule looked the way it did.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks, Doug.
Sure.
Okay, I think we've had a pretty thorough discussion. Supervisor Drew, did you have one more question?
I do, and it's for Mr. Manske. I mean, he gave us half the equation on that pension obligation bond, the debt being at about 6%, which we're realizing. If I recall that, we also need to realize 8% or better on the investment side of it. So could you give us that side of it?
On that side of it, we issued the bonds in about April of 2009. That year, we had a return of about 22% in the pension plan. The subsequent year, I believe we had a return of about 12%. In the year after that, which was... I think we had a return close to 1% or 2%, so it was not that good in 11. In 12, we had a return. The initial return for 12 for the pension plan was around 11%. So we've done well with the pension obligation bonds. And I ran, prior to the issuance of the bonds, I ran through a number of different scenarios and generally the scenarios indicated that it's your first 5 years that determined your likelihood of success with the issuance of pension obligation bonds or not, especially the first 3 years. And if you had a higher than an 8%, 10-11% return in those years, it was very difficult to take that away. You could have 0%, but you, in essence, built up a large cushion from that. So we're going to be working on a calculation to give that back to you so that we can tell you the overall return we've had so far and the rate that we've had for these bonds. But any cushion, originally we said we needed a cushion of 1.5%, which means we had 8% we needed on the pension side, and 6.5% on the debt. We're probably going to be down in the neighborhood of 5.5 to 5.6 on the debt, and probably 10, 10 to 11% in the pension bonds, which gives us a nice cushion.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just want to say, I mean, that is probably one of the toughest decisions I've made as a board member, and then to have had criticism from the administration for having done that. I am very happy to hear your report because I think we made a very good decision. This board made a good decision, and it has been working out. So thank you, Mr. Mansky. Sometimes those decisions are very tough when you don't get to see the results, but now we're seeing the results.
Right.
And I just want to say the board made a good decision on pension obligation bonds, so thank you.
Thank you.
Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, and I know we want to move on, but I think an important point has been made here, and that's with my initial point when I made my comment about some of the decisions we made, especially financially. We had some pension obligation bonds going back to the Walker administration very early on, which were not good deals for us. We waited. And I take a umbrage, too, the board. And significant. Our bond rating is just as good as the city or the state. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, what I take umbrage with, and here's the point, and the finances be done, and what this board has done, and we waited to make a good decision. We waited for timing. We did it the right way by waiting, not jumping into the first plan, and having a fund on the side, sustainability fund. But, I mean, we got accused that we were, you know, the state said, or some people in the state representative said that we were one bad contract away from being unsustainable and losing our viability as a government. As you can see, our finances hardly hold that way. So I think that point needs to be made. I was pretty upset when I heard that, well, we were one contract away from losing all viability and losing our status as a county government. And our bond rating is as good as anybody. Our pension fund is as good as anybody. Pension obligation bonds, you know, a difficult decision like you mentioned, Supervisor, but one that had to be made because it wouldn't be sustainable if we hadn't done the bond. There's no question about that. But we're not unique in governments for this kind of situation, you know, for retirees and our bonding. So I think, you know, with all the bad publicity we got and all the irrational comments, it's nice to hear that maybe we did some things right after all. We are a viable government and have a viable pension system. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you take the roll on item one, please?
On approval, Supervisor Fox.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Grosser.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Danforth.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Aye.
Item number two is from the Office of the Comptroller, requesting approval of initial authorizing resolution and final bond resolution for the issuance of a not-to-exceed amount of $60 million for general airport revenue bonds to finance various airport project improvements included in the 2011 through 2013 capital improvement budget.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, proposal for the delegation for the issuance of the not-to-exceed amount of $60 million consists of projects from 2011 through 2013. The last time the county issued airport bonds, it was in 2010. These will be revenue bonds. The total amount for the projects is $67 million, and that's being reduced by about $13.3 million because of an approved project in 2010. The airport has another option for building a snow equipment storage building, so we're able to reallocate those bonds to the projects from 2011-2013. The estimated debt service on it is about $85.8 million for the not-to-exceed amount, $60 million. We have parameters that we're asking for, similar to the other financing, maximum coupon rate of 6%, the maximum interest rate of 5.5%, 10-year call, and 99% of the par amount of the bonds. This one, as well, will be a delegation again.
And we need a public hearing for this?
You would need a public hearing for actually the corporate purpose as well as this one, and the refunding that will come up as the next item.
We have one.
We have a meeting scheduled. The agenda is out there for February 7th, board day at 9 a.m.
Okay. Any questions to Ms. Bryan? Supervisor Hopps.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Bryant. Looking at the report on this, thank you for the detailed report. I noticed that the maximum true interest cost is at 5.5%. On an upcoming item, we have, this is on believe also on, airport bonds. This is, I'm looking back at the capital improvement bonds. They have a slightly lower rate. But I notice there's some slight differences in some of the parameters. There's a half a percentage point in most cases. But I'm curious, are they coming from different bonding agencies, or am I looking too closely at that without sufficient information?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the difference in the parameters are primarily, for example, the corporate purpose issue. It's a competitive bid, tax-exempt issue, general obligation, and those typically have lower rates than the revenue bond issues because of the different source. You're pledging your tax levy for the corporate purpose, and the revenue bonds is going to be the revenue coming from the signatory airlines that are paying for it. Or if it's PFCs, it'll be the PFC, the ticket charge. So it's because of the different source. One's more stable than the other, so that's why you're looking at different parameters. On the refunding, it's because it's a much smaller issue, so you're thinking you're gonna, it's going to be, and it's also a shorter term. So because of the shorter term, you're in the shorter part of the interest rate scale.
Okay, that sounds very reasonable. That makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on this? Now we need, can we get a motion?
Sure.
Yeah.
Move approval.
A motion for approval. We take the roll.
On approval, Supervisor Hall.
Aye.
Mr. Schmidt.
Aye.
Dorsey.
Aye.
Hudson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Kemper.
Aye.
Who wants to say no?
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. Did you get Supervisor Roman West?
No.
He's here.
What did the Supervisor Roman West on approval?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item number 3 is from the Office of the Comptroller, requesting approval of an authorizing resolution and final bond resolution for the issuance of a not-to-exceed amount of $3.5 million of general airport refunding bonds to refund the balance of the outstanding debt for the $7,125,000 Airport Revenue Bond Series 2003A.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, in 2003, the county issued about $7.1 million in bonds to complete the financing for the parking structure at the airport. We have an opportunity to refund the balance of that debt service. It's 2013 to 2020 term. It's about $3.4 million. We're requesting a not-to-exceed amount, again, for cost, it factors in cost of issuance and a little bit of room there. So we would basically do this refunding at the same time that we would do the new money issue, the not-to-exceed $60 million amount. The difference in parameters is the 4.5% on the maximum coupon.
Any questions? Do we have a motion? Take the roll, please.
On approval, Supervisor Hogg.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
On the West.
Aye.
Thursday.
Aye.
Hudson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Kemper.
Aye.
Dawson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved on a vote of 9-0. Item number 4 from the Office of the Comptroller, expressing official intent regarding certain capital expenditures as defined in Exhibit A to be reimbursed from the issuance general revenue airport bonds.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the corporate purpose bond reimbursement resolution, the purpose for doing this is the projects that have been approved as a part of the 2013 adopted budget as well as the earlier projects, the departments will be implementing them prior to us issuing the bonds to finance them. And in accordance with the Federal Treasury rules, in order for the county to reimburse itself with those bonds once the issuance occurs, we need to express our intent to do so. This will allow us to reimburse for projects 60 days prior to the date of approval of the reimbursement resolution. So we're before you in compliance with the federal guidelines, or excuse me, federal rules.
Any questions on this item? Now, do we have a motion?
Go ahead.
Supervisor Hoskins, Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bryant, you're saying that
before we can actually write a resolution or pass a resolution to have the bond reimbursed, we have to have a resolution stating our intention to do so. I mean, 1 month in advance or within a 60-day period.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, before you're able to, once the bonds are issued and you receive the proceeds, before you're able to have them applied to any costs incurred prior to you issuing the bonds, you have to express your intent to do so. And that will allow you to reimburse 60 days prior to the approval of this reimbursement resolution. And that's pretty much allowing yourself to be reimbursed for all those costs that occurred pretty much in 2013.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion for approval. Any further discussion? If not, we take the roll.
On approval, Supervisors Hopp.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Bummer West.
Aye.
Joseph.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Camper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
And Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Item number 5 is from the Office of the Comptroller expressing official intent regarding certain capital expenditures as defined in Exhibit A to be reimbursed for the proceeds of issuance of the general obligation public purpose bonds or notes.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the airport reimbursement resolution is the same purpose as the corporate purpose. It's just for the airport projects.
We have a motion to approve. Any other discussion? Now we can take the roll, please.
Supervisors Hopp.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Bummer West.
Aye.
Joseph.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Camper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved. Vote 9-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take items a little out of order this time. District Attorney John Chisholm is here, and in respect for his time, we're going to move to item 13. If that's okay with the committee? Supervisor Schmidt's objection is duly noted.
Yeah. Item 13.
Is he not a Marquette High guy?
Yes.
Oh. Well, then I have you.
From the Office of the District Attorney, requesting authorization to abolish one position of secretarial assistant and create one position of intelligence analyst effective March 1st, 2013.
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, John Chisholm, Milwaukee County District Attorney. Thank you for the opportunity to address this. Be happy to answer any questions. In essence, what we're asking to do is to reflect some needs of the office. Our secretarial staff currently does an exceptional job, and as our investigations more and more often rely on extensive use of analytical skills and require the examination of information that's retained in computerized storage devices, the skill sets have changed significantly. And so what we're asking to do is to essentially convert what is a secretarial position over to an analyst position. It would facilitate the work that our investigators are doing significantly. We, as times have changed, we find ourselves sometimes on a single investigation in possession of over a terabyte of information, and it really requires a different type of skill set to be able to effectively further those investigations. So that's the essence of the request right there.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I vote for approval.
Thank you, Supervisor. Do you have any questions? Or Supervisor Sanchez, any questions? Supervisor Campos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are there any additional costs when there's an investigation other than the costs that are within the office?
Yes, there often are, but those costs are generally borne by the office. In other words, there's oftentimes a requirement that we seek additional resources. If for example, we reach a limit on a storage device or something like that, we come and seek some additional resources for that.
Okay. And who keeps that tally, and then what are those resources, where are they derived from?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Chief Investigator David Buddy from the DA's office. To answer your question,
You're asking who keeps a tally of that, or how do we...
Yeah, who documents that, and then where do you receive the additional resources from?
We would document it within the office with a paper trail using a justification for the expenditure and tie it to the actual investigation, whether it's a charged case number or a pending investigation. Okay. And then we would try to use funding within the office that was not allocated to general funding for things. And if we would exceed our budget in some area, we would have to make a request for extraordinary funding.
Who do you request it?
We'd have to request it from the county board.
Okay.
We've also gone to other agencies for assistance in the past with certain types of data analysis and things like that. And we've also had to contract with outside services. For example, if we had to do an analysis of, say, a large computer system from a company that was seized, that would greatly exceed the capability of the DA's office. It's not something we can do indigenously, so we would go to an outside vendor to help us with that.
Okay. And when you exceed a budget, are there budgets per investigation, or is there one budget for all investigations?
There's a budget for the entire office, and then the subcategories break down into areas that support investigations, but there isn't a budget for a particular investigation.
There is or isn't?
Is not.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Drizzt?
Thank you. You're basically giving up a secretarial assistant in order to obtain the intelligence analyst, correct?
That's correct.
And this is at a higher step in the pay range, so it results in a slightly higher cost. I'm also looking at the projected budget for 2012, and it appears the DA's office is coming in a deficit. Is that your understanding? I mean, are we correct in that? I'm not criticizing this.
I don't want to speak without consulting with Jim Martin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, morning. Supervisors. I'm James Martin from the District Attorney's Office. I serve as the Fiscal Budget Ministry, Mr. Buddy. And I think in our third quarter projection, we're forecasting a deficit of approximately $189,000, but our budget picture has improved significantly since then. So I don't know at this time whether people run a deficit. We've actually run a surplus for 20 consecutive years. The only reason that 2012 was a challenging budget is it was a very significant shortfall in state victims revenue that we reported to this committee back in February of last year. And at that time, we thought we would have roughly $250,000 deficit, given the projections we're receiving from the State Justice Department. Now, that's down to roughly $125,000. In the last quarter of the year, our vacancy and turnover was substantially over budget. So I think it will definitely be less than $189,000, but whether we'll be able to continue our streak of surpluses, I think that's
good. Thank you for that. And I'm not suggesting that the DA's office is running some kind of a flush department at all. My understanding is they are understaffed. And I guess I'm concerned when you come in here and give up a secretarial assistant in order to get your intelligence analyst. And I guess I'm going to be real blunt about it. Was this in order to get that? Was it the DOS that was requiring you to give up the other position?
No, this was our request. And if I could just offer some insight into that, Mr. Chair and Supervisor Jurczyk. For example, the person that was working as a secretarial assistant with the investigators was recently hired by a law firm to do, probably making $20,000 or $30,000 more than she was making as a county employee. Because of the work, because of her skill set, she did phenomenal work. But that's one of the concerns that we're trying to address is that there is a market value for people with skill sets in county service, and as the skills become increasingly technical and complex, the loss of talented people at the county level to the private sector is just a challenge, whether that's for secretarial assistants or other technical assistants within the office. And so that's what it reflects more than anything else.
Now, I'm sure she didn't go to any such plush surroundings as she had. But I guess bottom line is, are you recommending to the board that we accept this?
I am.
Thank you.
Any further questions or discussion? Not. Do we have a motion? We do have a motion, Supervisor Johnson. Would you take the roll then?
On approval, Supervisor Hoff.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Alma West.
Aye.
Durson.
Aye.
Durson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chisholm, I believe you had something on item 23 also. So,
item 23, that's correct.
Item 23.
Okay. Item number 23 from the Deputy Director, Department of Human Resources, relative to reclassing of existing position reallocations and non-representative positions, advancements of the pay range, and all revisions to executive compensation positions. Recommendations are to be implemented unless supervisors object.
Mr. Chair, supervisors, this is a continuation, actually, of the previous discussion to a certain extent, and that is that as the responsibilities and the job description and the extra requirements that have been placed upon the investigator's office, substantially reflecting the support that's been provided by the county board as it's directed in two areas, but the most significant change has occurred in our adopting the responsibility for witness protection in recent years. And because of that increased responsibility, there has been increased administrative responsibilities and additional investigators brought into the office. What, if I could just give you a sense of the skill set that I've sought over the years, I seek experienced officers, experienced investigators for a number of reasons. I would estimate that the collective experience of the DA's investigators' office is in excess of 250 to 300 years right now. That has tremendous benefit both to the office and to the community. But as the responsibilities have increased, that usually means that I'm bringing in individuals who have retired from other law enforcement careers, and it's extraordinarily difficult to get somebody, say, mid-level experience, 10 years or so of experience, to bring them in under the current pay scale. And so what we asked and what Human Resources did was just to objectively assess how our investigators compare with other law enforcement entities with comparable responsibilities and duties. They did so, and again, the skill set that they look at that seemed most comparable actually compared not with say, for example, a sheriff's deputy as the responsibilities have evolved. That doesn't mean that they don't share many responsibilities in common. For example, site security and making sure that our personnel are safe in the workplace and that our witnesses are protected while they're here and outside. But what it's most reflective of, and as they were comparing agencies, was actually an agent for the Division of Criminal Investigation, which oftentimes requires them to investigate more complex investigations. For example, if an attorney, a recent example would be an attorney who built the county for about $500,000. That required an extensive investigation, a skillful investigation. That person was held accountable. In recent years, we have led investigations in child welfare compliance that the state will tell you has resulted in probably a net savings of upwards of $90 million to the state that was directed at the county. These, again, are just complex investigations that require extensive skill sets and experience, quite frankly. And so that is the purpose of this request right here, so that we can continue to bring in top quality people to address these critical issues. And without implying anything about the wonderful people that, that work for me right now, so we can bring some youth in as well. So, it requires that combination of skill and energy.
Ms. Mitchell, do you have anything to add to this? Item 23?
I have no one out at this time.
This doesn't require any action on our part. Unless someone objects, it's been authorized by the Human Resources Department. So are there any objections? If not, then thank you, Mr. Chisholm, for your time.
Thank you very much.
We're on item number 6, the Comptroller, an updated information report on the 2012 third quarter fiscal report. It is informational unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning again. Scott Mansky, Comptroller. This is intended just as an update to our 2012 fiscal status. The update is based upon what we knew as of the third quarter from reports from department and updating that for any new information that we have received. For 2012, we're in the process of closing our books right now, so we're going through and doing break-evens in departments and fringe benefits and seeing where all of our costs are at. In the previous report to you in December, we had a projection of an $8.7 million surplus. We're reducing the projection down to $7 million. The reason for that is the inclusion of the 2011 furlough payments in that dollar amount of $1.4 million, and that's for 2011 and for a payment of overtime and also for interest. We're hoping to get that payment out in February to people so as to stop the interest. We needed to get our payroll taxes and that in the new year started before we made that payment. So the update is around $7 million, and we'll continue to update the committee each month, each time that you meet. One of the new ordinances requires that the comptroller inform you on a monthly basis of where the status of the county status is on a monthly basis. So we'll continue to update you on where 2012 is, and we'll begin telling you where 2013 is at also. You'll be seeing those. The way that we'll intend to do that is intend to get an intensive update from departments on a quarterly basis, and then we'll use those quarterly updates to give you monthly changes and what's being made available. That's all I have to report.
Supervisor Jersey.
First of all, I am going to move that the place is on file, so I'll make that motion. Couple questions, starting with the Department of Family Care, the CMO. You're reflecting a projected deficit of 1.385,000. It's my understanding that that CMO has its own contingency fund, so I'm wondering why that's being reflected in our report as a deficit from Waukee County.
What we do is we indicate that we have a deficit, and then we put a line right beneath it in the report that indicates that we're going to get a contribution from the reserve.
So that's a wash.
Yep, so that's a wash. So they have they have covered all of their reserve amounts that they have, and they have approximately an additional $10 million beyond what the state requires them to have, so that these amounts will be able to come out of that reserve requirement.
The sheriff's office is running one of the largest deficits. I'm wondering, we have a proposal before us to take the electronic monitoring out of the sheriff's budget, put it into contingency. Does this deficit already include that action, the report?
I am not sure if it does include that or not. So,
Mr. Campbell, it does not.
That is correct. It is not.
Okay, so then I should be concluding from that that the sheriff who's refused to do electronic monitoring and spend the money that this board put in the budget is going to be running an even larger deficit after we, if, assuming we approve that, correct?
If he does not implement EMR, the $600,000 would go unspent. So you can't really make that judgment at this point. He's reflecting 2012 third quarter actuals. This transfer relates to the EMR, and should, you know, the sheriff not spend if the sheriff does not spend those proceeds, you don't really know if he's going to spend them or not for EMR at this point in time. So you can't really add or subtract that to the projected third quarter results.
I'm going to speculate he's not going to spend it. And then the other question is on $9,000, and we've got Department of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, which is all grouped into $9,000. With respect to that deficit, is that basically reflecting the parks deficit?
That's basically the parks, and we'll clear up that definition there. That's just the Department of Parks, so I apologize for that there. And they're actually at the present time projecting that they will break even by the end of the year now.
Okay.
So.
And, you know, I've long suggested that the Parks Department, as it exists in Milwaukee County, strictly runs parks. We then have a number of cultures, which really have no director. And I just think when we have cultures, we should break that out. And specifically, you do, for example, the zoo. You specifically state what their concern is. And I guess from that, I'm drawing a conclusion that there are no other cultures causing a deficit within Milwaukee County. And that probably is true because we basically control that through our budget, and they do separate budget.
That would be correct because we just provide an amount to all of the other cultural institutions.
I think that's the end of my questions, and I did make a motion to place the file.
Any further discussion? If not, will you take the roll on the motion?
The motion for receiving placed on file, Supervisor Haas.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Paul West.
Aye.
Pressler.
Aye.
Hipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Gamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
And Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved and a vote of 9-0. Item number 7 is from the Director of Audits from the Office of the Comptroller, submitting an informational report titled Workforce Development Contract with Wisconsin Regional Training Partnership, Building Industry Group Skilled Trades Employment Program. And this was considered by the Committee on Economic Development. And they took no action on this, and this report is informational unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as you may recall, the contract between Milwaukee County and WRTP Big Step requires our office to be involved in reviewing the quarterly reports of the contractor. We've met with the contractor and with staff of ED and DOS Fiscal, and I think we've had very productive meetings in terms of making sure that that accountability matches up with the requirements of the contract. The contractor, quite apart from any involvement on our part, has retained Baker Tilly to provide the reviews that are required under the contract. And internally, DOS Fiscal, Vince Masterson, has worked with the contractor, and Vince has developed a template that essentially mirrors what's required for fiscal and programmatic accountability. It's a very robust spreadsheet, and I was very encouraged by the cooperation that the contractor offered in developing that template and their commitment to making sure that it's all filled out. I think between the contractor doing what is identified in the contract, Baker Tilly providing an audit of that report that they must provide, and then our office and ED committee looking at the report once it's finished, you're going to have a pretty robust accountability mechanism here. It's in fact a bit more than we're used to seeing in these kinds of contracts, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's what you all decided when you approved the contract, and the metrics are there to give you the information, I think, on how it's coming together. Fiscally and programmatically.
Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To accompany the information in item 8, I move to
see it in place on file. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank the Comptroller's Office for assisting. It seemed like a long struggle to get to a point at which we could all agree that there was sufficient oversight. And I've been asking for it from the beginning. I just want to be clear that I'm supportive of that, and I appreciate that they put it in place in a manner that hopefully will be beyond any future criticism from the administration. Thank you.
We can hope.
I am.
Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you. I would go along with those comments from my colleague. I ask these kinds of questions too, and I'm pleased that the groups have gotten together. I mean, we want accountability. We need jobs. 7 and 8 are really aligned in my matter, in my mind. And in economic development, we talked about, Mr. Hare, would you cooperate that? Then we will get actually some start on these reports in our next cycle. Then,
Mr. Chair, the first committee report to the committee is actually completed. It just hasn't been audited yet by Baker Tilly.
Yeah.
I expect the second report will follow closely on the heels of that, and then for the remaining 4 reports, we expect them to be timely to the committee. As Supervisor Lipscomb pointed out, there's a little rough start on the front end, but it's looking very good in terms of everybody understanding what needs to be done and then actually doing it.
So I guess I'll just, our summary was we don't need any action, but we can proceed in place and file to get a report, so this is progressing nicely. I'm very happy to see that. Thank you. Thank you to all.
We have a motion from Supervisor Johnson to receive and place on file. Take the roll on the motion, please.
Madam, on the motion, Supervisor Hart.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Applebaum.
Aye.
Thursday.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion to receive and place on file. Put it on a vote of 9-0.
Thank you.
Item number 8 is from the Fiscal and Budget Administrator, the Department of Administrative Services, submitting an informational report addressing guidelines, the number of jobs created, accountability and expenditures relating to Milwaukee County's Ready-to-Work Workforce Development Program, agreement with Wisconsin Regional Training Program, and Building Industry Group Skills Trade Employment Program. This was also considered by the Committee on Economic Development, which took no action on it. It is also informational, unless otherwise directed by the Committee.
Chairman Supervisor Craig Hamill, Staff Fiscal. There was a board report request for this information requesting what would be outlining the guidelines, the number of jobs created, the accountabilities, and expenditures year to date. This report provides that information, just basically piggybacks on what Mr. Hare had already said regarding contract monitoring with WTRP Big Step. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any questions, but for item 7, I also move to receive and place on file item 8 so that board members are aware of the progress as relates to the number of jobs created.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, since no one wants to highlight it, we seem to bury the lead here in this report. Talk as much about how we can terminate the contract as we do about the results. I'll share it. 547 Milwaukee County residents connected with Big Step. 171 participated in completed career pathway training, and 47 were placed into employment with an average hourly rate of $15.61 an hour. I think that's good news. It's working. People are going to work because of training and assistance that we have provided. And after all this, I think it shouldn't go unnoticed. And I appreciate all those who supported it all along. I appreciate even those who constructively had their reservations. And we've been able to work through many of those, I hope. And I really do hope that going forward we can get beyond the fact that there was so much opposition to this and focus on the fact that with all of the people that we have that need to be put to work, and employers saying that they need people trained to do the jobs they have available,
that we have a program that is working, and that we can focus on that. And I applaud the work WRTP and Big Step are doing. They do happen to be here, represented here today, if there were questions for them directly. But it should not go unnoticed that people are actually working and getting paid because of what we did. Thank you.
Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Supervisor Lipscomb. 47 people employed is great. And what's really good to highlight is the amount of hourly rate that they're making, 15.61. So that's a pretty good amount to make to be able to provide for your family. So they need to be commended on their work, and I just want to highlight it as well. So I look forward to more progress. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Johnson and Supervisor Griffith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted the board members to get the information, at least to look at it for board day. And I know that Supervisor Lipscomb was not going to say something, and he did. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is his baby, so he was going to say something.
Supervisor Jerzyk and Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, I just want Supervisor Lipscomb to know we read that very same paragraph in Economic Community Development and underlined the importance of getting jobs for our citizens is one of the key and most important priorities of not only economic development, but I think the chairwoman has stated it, the board has stated it. So that was underlined in our committee as well. Thank you.
Supervisor Schmidt.
And I wanted to mention that, too, because I actually read that sentence in economic development, and I was one of the constructive questioners, I guess, on this from the Verbeek. You spent a lot of time on it with yourself and the other sponsor. I visited Big Step, Mr. Buford. We've gone through the and I think they particularly have a difficult job. I saw the class that was going on when I visited, as a matter of fact, and these are young men for the most part, African American, and those who don't even have GEDs. It's a tough group to work with and try to get jobs. And this is, we needed this. I questioned the amount of money we put into $20. That was in getting bang for our buck. 47 people are wonderful. I'm also been told that we're going to get a report that some of these will be ready for county jobs, which I always, that was one of my main questions, is what kind of jobs can be, you know, get trained that people can use their skills to come to Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County's put $1 million in. I'd like to see some jobs in Milwaukee County from this. So I've been told that's part of it, and I'm very pleased to see that. And I don't think it was against the concept, like you said, which is that we get the bang for our buck here, which we always have to look at. And I'm hoping those numbers continue to go up, and pleased to see it too. Thank you.
So we have a motion. We take the roll on the motion, please.
To receive and place on file, Supervisor Cox.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Trimble West.
Aye.
Jerzyk.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
And Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion to receive and place on file, approved on a voting line to Item number 9. Resolution authorizing and directing the Comptroller's Audit Service Division to conduct an audit of General Mitchell International Airport as it relates to minority and gender hiring practices, historical data, promotions, termination practices, and turnover. This was referred to the Committee on Transportation, Public Works, and Transportation on a vote of 7-0. It was approved on a vote of 7-0.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. I forgot to mention last time, Jerry here, the Director of Audits for Comptroller Mansky. We've looked at this resolution. It's the kind of thing that I'm confident our office can do. We're not in a position to disagree with the need for the audit or the nature of the audit. We think we can accomplish it, and if it's your desire, we'll go ahead and do it.
We have a motion. Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the assignment as much as the Chairman of the Department. Chairman of the Committee on Transportation, Public Works, and Transit thought it was necessary to have such an audit to take a look at what's happening there as it relates to minorities, historical data, termination practice, etc. So I move forward.
Supervisor Romo.
Mr.
Chairman,
I'd
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a quick question I've thought of regarding the scope of the audit, perhaps best suited for Mr. Hare to answer. In the be it resolved clause around line 24, it explains that the audit will be related to minority and gender hiring practices, historical data, promotions, termination practices, and turnover. I am personally aware of several situations at the airport that would be questionable in relation to hiring practices, promotion practices, and termination, but they are not necessarily specifically minority or gender related. I'm curious if the scope of the audit would include broad review of those items or if it is only specifically for minority and gender issues.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. When we do an audit, we try to keep the work narrow to the scope because we understand that's the interest of, in this case, the county board, if it's a resolution. However, what we tell everybody the first hour we spend with them is that we don't come there with blinders on, to the extent that during our work, if we identify other issues, we will roll them into the scope of the current audit or we will schedule it for an audit after that one is completed. So I'm familiar with some of the issues you're discussing, and I would be shocked if we got too far into this audit and didn't end up looking at some other issues as well.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further discussion, we take the roll on the motion.
The motion for approval, Supervisor Scott.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Ramal Webb.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Put down a vote of 9-0.
Thank you.
Item number 10, resolution authorizing and directing the Employee Benefits Director in conjunction with the Employee Benefits Work Group to examine the potential benefits from transferring employees and retirees from the current self-funded traditional health care plan coverage to a coverage provided under the Patient Protection and Affordability Care Act.
Mr. Hanchick, I mean, do you want to speak to this and then is it okay to speak to you? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Matt Hanchick, the Employee Benefits Administrator. Just a couple points I'd like to raise with regard to this resolution. Much of the work we're going to be doing is part of our comprehensive review for compliance with the Affordable Care Act. For example, assessing the potential for the play or pay penalty underneath the Act is something that's already in progress in conjunction with DAS Fiscal, and something that we'll be reporting on in the future regardless, and something that we would frankly have to do as part of our annual budget exercises and evaluation of options for 2014. Concern that I have with this is the in regards to the May time frame, and frankly the question I have is whether or not an exchange will exist in time for me to report on it. The just recently as this Friday, we got guidance from the Department of Labor indicating that they won't even be providing guidance on how to notify employees of their rights to access an exchange until the fall of this year. So to some extent, I'd be able to report on just some general financials, some options, what some of the risks and potential employment issues are, but I won't be able to walk through the how an employee would engage the exchange or what their options would look like underneath it.
Do you think it's best then to take that date out completely or put a different date in? What would be your recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, it would ultimately depend on the scope of what you want me to report. If you want a full comprehensive report, I would suggest pushing it out at least one cycle, possibly further, just to get a better sense of what the exchanges are going to look like. If you're more interested in the general question, that's something that we could do.
Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably made a small mistake there that I should have taken you up at the first opportunity to speak to this item to give it a proper introduction so we're all familiar with what this means. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, as abbreviated in this resolution, as PPAC, we're all familiar with as Obamacare, it calls for these health care exchanges to be operational by 2014. as it stands, employers will no longer have to provide their own health care for employees. They will have the option of instead paying a fee to the government and participating in those health care exchanges. If Milwaukee County as an employer did the research and found it to be verifiably beneficial to participate in these exchanges, we could save as much as $103.5 million, which would then be used to, of course, help subsidize either other employee health care in other ways or to support other county programs such as mental health. There are two things that approval of this resolution would do. The first is allow the work group to explore the opportunities. I understand Mr. Hancheck just testified that they are looking into this, but this would make the direction formal. And second, it would request that the committee, that this committee be informed of the findings when that research is done. The reason that I think that it's imperative to consider passing this item now rather than postponing is because at least the rules of those exchanges will be available beginning in March, and since we don't meet again until after those rules will most likely be available, and our next full board meeting to approve a resolution such as this would be later as well, it would only make sense to make sure that we have the formal directive on file for the work group to explore the opportunities and be able to report back to this committee. I completely understand Mr. Hancheck's concern about the timeline and would move to amend this resolution on line 64 to change the date of an initial report to this committee from May 1st, 2013 to August 10th, 2013, which would ensure that before we really get started into our own budgeting season on the board here, that we would have some kind of an update, at least within the scope of what the law would allow Mr. Hancheck and the Employee Benefits Work Group to provide.
So we have that amendment? Have that written? I mean, you made note of the office amendment?
Yes. I have that on line 67. We will change the date from May 1st, 2013 to August 10th.
Correct. And that is a formal motion for amendment.
Supervisor Jerzyk and Supervisor Roman West.
Mr. Hancheck, did Supervisor Alexander discuss this with you?
No, we haven't spoken directly about it yet.
Do we know if the state has made a final decision yet on going into doing an exchange?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the last that I've seen on it is that the state was deferring to the federal government to create the exchange, that they were not pursuing it. I haven't seen an update since then.
Right. That's basically my information, but I don't know that the deadline has completely expired on that decision. Do you know if that's correct?
I do not know.
I mean, and I just read in the paper this week that they're still coming out with definitions under the Act. There was an article today in the paper that they're going to base health care costs on individuals rather than family under the Act. So, you know, this thing is really still very much in motion. I do wish Supervisor Alexander would have talked to Mr. Hancheck before you prepare a resolution like this. Certainly it would be useful to talk to committee members. The work group, I've had excellent regard for the work group. They understand their mission, if you will, and I think do try to find cost-saving opportunities. But this Patient Protection Affordable Care Act is still so much in motion. To create a policy statement at this time, I think, is very premature. I think, you know, we need to understand first what our state government is doing, what the implications may be for county government, all kinds of questions. So I am not inclined to support this at this time. Thank you.
Supervisor Roman West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor, I have a lot of what I was going to say, but in addition to that, I also feel that if something on the committee that seems obvious to be going to come back, something that's attached, but that they're looking at, I have to talk during the budget regarding this item where it kind of leads up. And so, I'm going to come back before the committee, and I expect to know some type
thing, Mr. Chair. So, I admittedly, I don't profess to understand how the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act very well. Perhaps you could help me with something. The $2,000 assessment per employee, that's assessed to employers if they choose not to provide health care, right? But that does that provide them with access to the exchange? Does it just allow them to tap into the exchange, or does it actually pay for the health care? That can't possibly be their premium or that can't possibly pay for their coverage.
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, the penalty that Supervisor Lipscomb's referring to is generally referred to as the play or pay penalty. And what it is it's a tax or a surcharge placed on employers who, one, choose not to offer coverage to any full-time employee as the federal government defines it, and two, that employee seeks coverage through the exchange and qualifies for a subsidy based on his or her income for their premiums in that exchange. The $2,000 is a tax to the federal government. It's not a payment of premiums. The employees would still have to pay for whatever the premiums were in the exchange, to whatever extent that we as an employer didn't offer any sort of subsidy or financial assistance.
Okay. I appreciate that. So I did at least understand that element of it. I guess to me, when I first saw this, it came up, under suspension of the rules. I had 2 minutes to look at it before voting that I didn't want to vote on it. It just seems so disingenuous to purport the potential savings when it's essentially analogous to, last year had we decided to just not offer any coverage to our employees, we could save $110 million or more. Or if we just wanted to offer really crappy coverage, we could save 50 or 70 or pick an arbitrary amount up to the full amount that we pay for coverage. That is the essence of what this is suggesting. You can save as much as you're willing to not provide coverage. That option was available to you before the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. But exercising that option is the opposite of the spirit of the of the act, which is that we would like more people to have better coverage. So let's just call it what it is. That is just such a disingenuous claim to have been made that this is a great opportunity. Look at this. Look at how much you can save if you want to be.
Yeah.
The worst employer, public employer in the country, you could offer no coverage and shift all your employees into an exchange that we don't even know what shape or form it's going to take. I just, there's no way I vote for that. I appreciate that the work group is going to try to understand how the exchanges are going to work and what the effects would be and all that, and certainly that analysis has to happen. But I'm not going to vote for this under some sham promise or expectation that this is it. This is how we're gonna fix our finances, because we're just gonna not offer coverage. Let's be real.
We have a list here. So Supervisor Alexander, Johnson, Haas, and Stanton.
Oh,
Supervisor Alexander.
I yield until the end.
Okay. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to housekeeping matter, I want to ask staff if an author ask for an amendment, does that have to be voted on once the resolution?
Yes. We should be speaking on the amendment.
So, once a motion for approval has occurred? I'm trying to understand.
Right now we have an amendment that is before us.
Okay. Once the amendment is offered, by the author that has to be voted. If she had independently said that I'm going to change this and change it, we would not have had to vote on it. I'm asking with respect to procedure. That's what I said. a housekeeping. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, once the resolution had been referred by the chairwoman's office, it was then now in front of the committee. Any changes to it would require amendment.
Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Hans.
I would not be speaking of the business, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sort of having a wide ranging discussion on the whole topic at this point, so we'll just keep rolling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too felt that procedurally and conceptually it's early yet, as we don't yet know the form that the Affordable Care Act will take, as the state has deferred to federal government on implementing it. That is a short summation of my statement. I too feel it is premature at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you think this is appropriate to dedicate the time to study this?
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, I think it's absolutely appropriate and prudent to study it and to evaluate it as one option among many. To clarify one of my prior statements, the exchanges themselves are basically just a vehicle to provide access to buy health care coverage. That doesn't mean it's an all-or-nothing proposition for Milwaukee County. It very well may be a worthwhile option or endeavor to look at steering employees to an exchange with some financial support or not. But frankly, we won't know until we've looked at it. I think I would be failing in my job if I didn't at least present it as an option. That doesn't mean I'm in a position at this point to say whether or not it would be a good idea, but I don't think there's a harm in us reviewing it and looking at it. My concern is primarily one of timing and what information is going to be available to me.
Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a quick question of Mr. Hanschick, if I may. Whom do you directly report to, sir?
Chairman, supervisors, I report to the Director of Human Resources, Gary Mitchell.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, in response to questions from other members of this committee that I haven't spoken with Mr. Hanschick, I will cede that I did not. However, I did speak directly with the Director of Human Resources, to whom he reports, and received what could have been considered the equivalent of not only a green light to move forward with this resolution, but the question about the timeline and dating, which is why you probably all saw me nodding my head at Mr. Hanschick when he brought up the timeline, because I already knew that that was a request from Human Resources, and I had already prearranged and agreed to offer an amendment to my own resolution. Second, I recall times in the past on this committee where issues have been brought up that were germane to the topic at hand, and some of us have made suggestions for reports or studies or research to be done or made, and members of the committee have said, well, I'd rather see that on paper in a resolution. So I find it rather disingenuous to say that I was out of line in any respect or to imply such by writing a resolution, putting such a complicated topic on paper for research for everybody to look at before the meeting today, ask questions of me if they had any, and move forward with the possibility of research, which that's all this would authorize, which they're doing anyway. It just backs up what they state that they're already doing. And to instead say that this should be unwritten and some sort of a verbal direction, and that that might be better. Further, the notion that it could be disingenuous to purport potential savings, I guess I would rebut that with the notion that if there are savings expected, number one, it is still up to this committee in the budget session and the full board to decide whether or not we would move on those. Number two, as identified in the whereas clauses of the resolution itself, it would be up for discussion of how those savings were applied. As Mr. Hanschick just admitted, if there were savings to be recognized and the board did decide to go in that direction of offering one of a wide variety of options incorporated with the health care exchanges, we could then supplement, for example, the same way that we currently fund the health savings accounts. For all we know, maybe that could be doubled to employees because something better than what we have now could be offered. But we're not going to have the proper leeway to explore this and implement it starting January 1st of next year if by the time we hit budget, when that budget is in our hands, we don't know what all of our options are. And if we wait until May or June to make the direction to the Employee Benefits Work Group to study this, there's a very good chance they may say, well, we're working on a few other projects right now, and we've looked into it, but I don't think we'll have time to answer your questions in time for budget. So all I'm trying to do is pave the way for ease later on in all of us understanding what all of our options are and placing the appropriate votes at that time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we have an amendment before us.
Thank you.
The amendment is just to change the date from May 1st to August.
And that was moved by Supervisor Alexander, correct?
It was.
So we can, if there's no further discussion, we can take the roll on the motion on the amendment, and then we'll have a resolution as amended if it passes, and then we can get a motion on the entire resolution pending all this. So let's take the roll on the motion of changing the date from May 1st to August 10th.
On the amendment, Supervisor Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Goldwell?
Aye.
Gerson?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Gephardt?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye. So,
now,
so now we have the resolution as amended. Supervisor the wrong ones.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to lay this item over to the call of the chair. I don't believe that we have. First of all, I heard Mr. Hanchick clearly say that he is on top of this and that it is going to be a focus of the work group. So I believe this is a little unnecessary at this point. If at some point in the future it becomes necessary, then we have the resolution on file, and that can be the determination of the chairs of the Finance and Audit Committee.
Do we have a motion to lay this over to the call of the chair? Is there any further discussion? If not, take the roll on the motion.
Supervisor
Cox. Aye. Schmidt? Aye. On the left. Aye. Mr. Chair, for the conversation.
Item 11, with Chief Financial Officer of the Milwaukee Public Museum City Quarterly Financial Update. This went to the Committee on Parks, Energy, and Environment, and they took no action on this item.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Jay Williams, and I'm President and CEO of the Milwaukee Public Museum, and joining me is Mike Burnett, who's our Chief Financial Officer. I'd also mention that here today also is the Vice Chairman of our board, Essie Whitelaw, and the head of our Senior Vice President of Marketing, Communications, and Admissions, Mary Bridges. On behalf of all our constituents, we want to thank you for the partnership we have with Milwaukee County. To summarize our first quarter, our attendance was strong, up about 18% over last year. In particular, our members are making really good use of the museum. Their attendance is up about 36%. Children, school groups, and teens attendance is up around 13%. The quarter also saw over 6,000 people attend our Halloween hauntings, which has become a wonderful event for young families. Our gala on October 20th was attended by nearly 600 people and exceeded our fundraising goal. Our traveling exhibit, Real Pirates, opened on December 14th and has met wonderful reviews and is meeting our expectation on attendance. Our financial results for the first quarter show our net asset position slightly ahead of plan. As you know, the first quarter is really the fiscal slow point for us of each calendar year. We're basically ahead of plan due to expense management and our investments being ahead of plan. We are running behind plan on fundraising and membership. We also anticipated the opening of the Daniel M. Sorif National Geographic Dome Theater and Planetarium in the first quarter. And due to some technology issues, in fact, Mike and I saw it last night. It was really cool. So we will have 3D educational movies available soon. I think we're going to have a soft opening in February and open to the public with promotion March 1st. But you will be really impressed with this. And that's just put us a bit behind on our attendance, as we thought that would be opened in March. As we look at the balance of the year, our focus is really on the fundraising side and continuing to manage our expenses well. We recognize we're going to have tight cash flow during the year. I would like to also mention that we continue to have very constructive discussions on the reestablishment of the lease management agreement and hope to have something to present to the committee in the near future. And we just very much thank you for your support.
Anything to add? Do you have anything to add?
The only thing that, Mike Burnett, Chief Financial Officer. The only thing I'd like to add is that, yes, we've been able to overcome some shortfalls in revenue with expense savings, but the issue for us primarily is our ability to generate operating cash this year, and that is our big challenge going forward. So with that, I'll leave it open for questions.
Thank you very much. I have just a couple quick questions, and forgive me for not being more on top of this, but what type of promotion, like cross interdepartmental promotions have you done? I know the Parks does a great job. It's Thursday night, so tonight we'll have Music Under Glass at the Dome, and Poland Under Glass coming up. In fact, the Chinese New Year, I think it's Friday, at the Dome. So have you made an attempt to have a booth set up at those events? Those are family events where you're capturing basically your audience. And so have you talked to, you know, Parks about throwing up a table there and trying to increase your, you know, just kind of the,
yes.
You know, the promotion of it. The other thing is, how are you guys doing with social media? Are you using Facebook? Do you have a Twitter account? Are you using, you know, every viable option? Because I think really it's just a matter of getting the information out there.
Sure.
Once people hear about the exhibit, they're excited about it, they want to go, but it's really just kind of putting it on people's radar.
Well, as long as I have Mrs. Bridges here, if I could have her comment maybe just for a minute, because she's our social media expert and handles all of our marketing, and be more appropriate for her than me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. We have just engaged with the Parks Department. In the last month, we have a new group sales manager that came on board about a year ago, and she is connecting with all of these people. We will not have a booth yet, but those are in our long-range plans. We are open on Thursday nights for the first time, and we're continuing to do that at a reduced rate for people to come to the exhibit and the museum, and to allow people that are working in the downtown area to come over. As far as social media, we do have all of the mediums that you suggested, and we continue to grow. And in fact, we're using social media just to promote, only social media, our food and froth event that's coming up on February 16th, to the point that it's almost sold out, and that has been just via social media.
Okay, that's wonderful. So you're using Groupon and all that, all those good things.
We've done one Groupon with a membership promotion. That was about a year ago. We look at those types of vehicles. Some are cost prohibitive because of what they have in line. You know, they want 50% and then 50% up front and then 50% off of what they make. So financially, we have to look at what they offer.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. I just think it could be a great, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your thing. I, with the parks especially. I mean, some of the exhibits that you have actually work really well. They work really well together. So
yes, we agree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you. I do think there's some important information in this letter, and I think it would be useful to receive and place this on file. So I'm going to make that motion. I continue to think that Milwaukee County government is going to have to assist Milwaukee Public Museum. This is a treasure in this community. I want to compliment you on the Pirates exhibit. I was in attendance the night that you had the opening. You know, when I'm at my ripe old age, when I learn new things, I think you're doing a really, not that I know everything, but I think you're doing a spectacular job. And I had never quite put pirates in with the slave trade quite the way that exhibit highlights it. So I applaud you on that. I think it's a great exhibit. And I do think, I know there was a full center page in the journal I think was it last Sunday?
This Sunday.
Yep. And you know, I do see it being advertised and out there. I agree with Supervisor West in terms of all the social media, and you can never do enough, I guess. But you're doing that. And then the other thing, last summer when you had some of us there, and I know Supervisor Schmidt's on your board, that archival collection you have is just it's just really special. And we have museums like the Field Museum in Chicago experiencing the same kinds of problems that your museum is facing. So this isn't unique. But those archival collections are going to be so important for scientists looking at climate change and so on to give actual specimens from the you go back quite a ways. I was just so impressed by that collection and the way it's being cared for. Now, but the community doesn't always know those things. And that's where government has some role in helping you to preserve that. So I think our cultural institutions, as much as you can, the public-private partnerships are great. I think you're going down the right path. But let's not mistake this. Government is going to have a role in preserving these kinds of archival collections because they're important for science, they're important for education. So let's get that message out there. Milwaukee County is going to continue to be a good partner with the Milwaukee Public Museum. I think our cultural institutions are extremely important for the whole county. And, you know, once again, I think county government has a real role here to play. We're going to have some tough decisions to make going forward. Your letter begins to highlight that. And I think we need to start educating our public on the Milwaukee Public Museum. There's a lot of issues out there with a lot of different cultural institutions, but that doesn't mean we don't try and we don't get the message out. So I think I will be a partner with you in educating the public, and I will also be a partner with you and with Supervisor Schmidt and the others in trying to help you find solutions to these difficulties. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I think one of the things, Supervisor, that people sometimes forget is we are a cultural attraction, but we're also a research institution, and we have scientists from all over the world that come and use that collection to further their research. In fact, right now we have two professors from UWM who are doing their sabbatical at the museum.
And we need to educate the public on that. They need to understand the importance of your institution in those roles. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did move receive and place on file.
Okay. Any further discussion on this item? If not, would you take the roll on Supervisor Jurczyk's motion?
To receive and place on file, Supervisors Haas.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Former West.
Aye.
Jurczyk.
Aye.
Goodson.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Camper.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
We have item 29, which is also what we're going to do in closed session on the museum. If the committee would like, so we can let these people go, we could go into closed session now, get it done, and then maybe, you know, we have other closed session items to do later.
Sounds good.
I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
So we need a motion then to go into closed session.
Do you like the item read first, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Item number 29 is an update on the lease and management agreement negotiations with the Milwaukee Public Museum. It is informational unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Could we get Mr. Grady to give us an opinion on that, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Let's make a motion first, and then we'll get Mr. Grady's opinion on the motion. Supervisor Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This committee may adjourn its closed session as provision of Wisconsin Statute, Section 19.851EZ, for the purpose of the committee deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, investing in public funds, or conducting other specified public business, whatever competitive or bargaining reasons require, closed session. And for the purpose of the committee receiving oral and written advice from legal counsel, at the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene in open session and take whatever actions may be necessary.
Mr. Grady, we have a motion. Is this an appropriate time item to go on closed session on?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Mark Grady, Deputy Corporation Counsel. This part of the closed session, the provision just read, is appropriate. I think we do that in closed session for the reasons inside the discussion. I expect, anticipate part of that discussion will be without being made present.
Correct. Okay. Then we'll be going into closed session. The motion is approved.
On the motion for approval of closed session, Supervisor Todd.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
From aware.
Aye.
Gerzit.
Aye.
Lipska.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion has been approved to go into closed session.
I appreciate that. So, I thought I'd meet you in the middle and I'd set things up.
Speakers are on.
Okay, it's 12:30. I will ask the clerk to please call the roll so that we can establish that we have a quorum for those of you watching at home.
Supervisor Todd.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
From the left.
Here.
Here.
Alexander.
Present.
Here.
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 Thank you. Let's start with item 12, correct?
Okay. Item number 12 is from the Office of the Sheriff. Requesting the creation of two positions of correction managers at the Correction Facility Central to be effective January 1st, 2013.
Go ahead.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. Actually, good afternoon. This came about actually in November of last year when the county exec put his budget out wishing to bifurcate the south and the central facilities. What that put on the agenda for us was the six of our, what we call captains, also with the other title that's given within the narrative, run the facilities. So technically six of those captains were put assigned to the south facility in the budget and four were assigned to central. They literally run the day-to-day operations on all three shifts, and with the time off we need two per shift. We've currently, under the system we have now, while the sheriff's in charge of both facilities, we actually use one captain to run both facilities at the same time to avoid having to hire extra individuals. This proposal, again, which I put forth in November, basically set it up to where if that break would happen, we would need extra captains at the central facility to make sure all the shifts were covered. There is literally no money being asked for this. It's basically, at this point, we're still asking you to approve this. Should the bifurcation go forth, then I would indeed hire these individuals. Currently, I will say this, I don't need them. If it's approved, I will not hire them, but if the bifurcation does take place, we will hire them. The way this will be paid for is I have several vacant CO lieutenant positions, and that is how it will be funded, so it will not result in any sort of deficit. Thank you.
Any questions? Supervisor Stamper?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. When you mean bifurcation, do you mean before or after if the legal implications go through?
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct. If we're still, of course, litigation is still in place. As of currently, the sheriff's still in charge of both facilities. Should that be changed by the courts, then I would need these positions.
Okay.
Any other questions? Supervisor Lipson?
Thank you. So, just trying to understand what I think you just said at the end there. So, This is a proposal you put forward in November when the sheriff supported the takeover of the House of Correction, but at this stage, it's unnecessary unless it goes forward. So you agree with DAS in that respect, that it doesn't have to happen now, but you did believe it was the right thing to do in November when we were all apparently on the same page, this being drafted November 20th after the budget had been adopted, veto overrides all of that.
Mr. Chairman, the supervisor, the simple answer is yes.
Thank you.
Well, could we hear from DAS, please? I believe DAS is in opposition to the request. If we could hear from them, please.
The report basically says that given that the litigation is currently out there and the sheriff's position is that the HOC shall remain with the sheriff along with the jail, at this point in time we see no need to fill these two positions. So our position is to wait until there's some resolution to that, and then we can revisit this issue at a later date. But presently, where things stand with the House of Correction and the jail, we would not recommend moving forward at this time.
And just so I'm clear, is it the administration's position that the south facility in Franklin is in fact the House of Correction and should remain operated as the House of Correction? That's what the administration's position is?
Yes.
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 So, and therefore, on behalf of the administration, DAS is recommending that we reject this request.
At this point in time, correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any response to that, Inspector?
Well, Mr. Chairman, supervisors, again, I respect everything that's been stated. The only thing that this will do if it's taken up today is it will, instead of me bringing it back in the future, it allows us the flexibility to hire the captains if necessary, and I'll just leave it at that at the board's discretion.
You know, I hate to use I'm new here, but I'm relatively new here. There's been some talk over the years that sometimes there's been I don't want to say anybody lies or doesn't tell the truth, but there's been a trust issue between the board and maybe the sheriff's office. So you're sort of giving us your word that, you know, you aren't going to fill these right now. Do we have any, if they were authorized and you did fill them, what recourse would we have? Not saying that you would, I'm just saying that there seems to be some issues like that sometimes.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the question, and the simple answer is we're not asking to fund these positions. So basically, I will say right now, I don't even have all of the 10 filled at this point that were allocated. Should this change happen, that's when I will hire the individuals.
Supervisor Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm moving approval. I heard what Mr. Campbell had to say, and I understand that there's the state of flux as it relates to the House of Correction, but I'm going to move approval of this particular item. I'm not involved in politics. I'm not involved in politics, and I'm just going to move approval.
We have a motion to approve. Did I miss you that, Commissioner? Sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, looking at both DAS's recommendation and the request itself, I think that while it's somewhat frustrating that we're not making any progress on what I think we all voted for in order to support the bifurcation during the budget, if we weren't to approve the creation of these positions, it might be almost as if we're betting against ourselves in the resolutions that we took up during the budget. And I would also be cautious of giving the sheriff and or his legal counsel any reason to claim that we are the ones being uncooperative or noncompliant with assisting in the changeovers. So I would also support the move for approval on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Stamper.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to follow your sentiments and say I'm also new here, but I want to ask if this can be laid over after you already moved approval due to waiting until we find out what happened. So I don't, you know, I see a need for this, but not if we lose. So not if the county loses. So I would say move the layover if that's possible until after the court makes their decision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion if it's an option. Yeah, layover.
It's always
a move.
Okay. Supervisor Drizik.
Thank you. I can support Supervisor Stamper's motion. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, and I would point out that we laid over several items on the House of Correction, or not we, the Judiciary Committee laid over several items on this. Obviously, the lawsuit, which I think is highly inappropriate, I'm just going to get that out there, because statutes clearly state that this board has the authority to decide to run a House of Correction, not a jail, a House of Correction, and that a superintendent or the sheriff can run a House of Correction. The sheriff has chosen to call a House of Correction another jail, and therefore has gone into court with a lawsuit, basically trying to strip away the clear statutory provision. I think the lawsuit is highly inappropriate. I think we're going to see pretty quickly that the sheriff, I don't know how he's going to pay his attorney fees on this, but that he's wrong. And I think laying over all of these matters until we get some clarity is not a bad option, and gets us fairly consistent with what judiciary has done. So I would certainly support that, and I'm glad Supervisor Stamper made that.
Supervisor Haas?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too felt that thought that what Supervisor Stamper was after would be, in fact, very appropriate in this case, and be laying it over to the call of the chair, pondering it. So good call, Mr. Supervisor Stamper. I think it would also be very educational for the public to see perhaps an ongoing summation and summary of the total legal bills that the sheriff has brought upon Milwaukee County. He's costing us a pretty penny, and this is yet another case. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? If not, would you take the roll on the layover motion?
On the layover to call the chair, Supervisor Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Roma West?
Aye.
Drizik?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
No.
Stamper?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to layover, vote is 7-2 is approved.
Thank you.
We already did item 13, you'll recall, so we're item 14.
We're on item number 14 from the Director of Department of Health and Human Services, requesting authorization to create one position of DD1 Environmental Care Administrator, one position of Fiscal Specialist, and two positions of Assistant Program Administrator. Abolish one position of Operations Coordinator, two positions of Clerical Assistant 1, and abolish upon vacancy two positions of Integrated Service Coordinator, non-rep at the Behavioral Health Division.
Another motion to approve, but we'll hear from speakers.
Good afternoon, Paula Lucy from the Behavioral Health Division. These personnel matters relate to some of our ongoing initiatives and redesign activities by creating an environment of care administrator. This will help us in our Joint Commission quest, and is the term that is used by the Joint Commission in environment care. It's a little broader scope of responsibilities than our previous operations manager had. Fiscal specialist is a situation where, with our new electronic medical record, we need a person that can monitor many of the bills, and other things will be created automatically, but we need someone of a higher caliber to take a look at the bills and manage that. And then lastly, this is a change in our area of our community support programs, where we would like to have two program assistants to manage some of the activities in terms of management of eligibility and whatnot, and moving people into community services. And actually saves a little money.
Any other, you have anything you want to wish to add? Any other discussion? If not, we have a motion, and we take the roll on the motion.
On approval, Supervisor Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Donald West.
Aye.
Persis.
Aye.
Lipska.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Scamper.
Aye.
Aye. And Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved, 9-0. Item number 15 from the director of Department of Health and Human Services, requesting authorization to amend section 15.81 of the Milwaukee County General Ordinances to create a trust fund for the Behavioral Health Division's wraparound Milwaukee program. The Committee on Health and Human Needs recommended this vote of 4-2. Be approved, yes.
Okay. Motion for concurrence has been made. Director Lucy, do you have
The wraparound program is a nationally and, in fact, internationally known program that functions as a managed care model. We get paid per member per month. And this year, our per month payment was fairly comfortable. Use that word, comfortable. Mm-hmm. And some of our expenses did not, we ended up with a surplus. Our expenses did not exceed our capitated rate. We expect that the state will make a change of our capitated rates in the future, and this money cannot go to the bottom line. It would otherwise have to be returned, and we'd like to keep this as a fund in a trust fund for years when, indeed, our expenses might exceed our payment rate. We've been working with Mr. Mansky's staff on this as well.
Any other questions or discussion?
Just a basic one in terms of the creation of a trust fund. Who are the two parties? Because I thought with these trust funds that we couldn't create trust funds on our own. So you have to either have a statutory requirement to create it, or you have a contractual obligation to create it. But in this case, we're just saying we want to create it. So how is that resolved here?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I'm Alex Pitts. I'm the Budget Manager for the Department of Health and Human Services. Attached to the report are actually two letters that we worked on with the Comptroller's Office, one from CMS requiring, as it states, I think in the third paragraph, that all funds associated with this Medicaid-funded program must be used for participants in the program with the exception of a small administrative fee. And then the second one is actually signed by Bruce Camrad, who runs this program for the Department of Health and Human Services, who indicates that he will indeed spend all funds related to the wraparound Medicaid program on services provided to those children. So the Comptroller's Office and we agreed that that was a requirement enough from an outside entity to establish a trust fund. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. So we're interpreting that requirement as
correct. We also reviewed with club council.
Okay. Thank you.
You take the roll on the motion?
Motion to concur. Supervisor Toss?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Donald West?
Aye.
Persis?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stanford?
Aye.
Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Motion to concur. Approved 9-0. Item number 16, from the Director of Department of Transportation and the Airport Director, submitting a semi-annual informational report on the status of all currently authorized airport capital improvement projects. The Committee on Transportation, Public Works, and Transit took no action on this item.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Supervisors. My name is Pat Walslager. I'm the Deputy Airport Director. In charge of finance and administration, what you have before you is one of the two semi-annual reports that we put forward every year. It gives you a status of the capital projects. For some reason, this was delayed. This is the report from June 30th, the December report for the second half of the year will be done after you close the books. I'm anticipating probably the April cycle. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions or go over the report if you...
Anything you'd like to bring to our attention in the report?
No, it's pretty much status quo. It's just giving you how much we've spent on each of the capital projects. I know one of the original questions and why this report was done initially was how many of the capital projects are created by fund transfer. And I think one of the things the airport has done, I've only been with the airport 2 years, but we create very few reports or very few projects by fund transfer. Most of them go through the full budget process. Occasionally there's something that comes up that's just like we had to add a check lane insecurity or something like that, and it's like you have to do it now. So they've been minor projects. They're not big projects that go through.
Supervisor Schmidt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say the, you know, we'll have a much better idea, and I think you can tell us more, too, about any projects that you're having a problem with, that we're spending all our monies and the scope of the project when we get to December. That would come next cycle, then, in March, you will get this to us.
I don't know that because of our deadlines for having things, we haven't closed the books yet. I need to close the books, so
right.
It'll probably be April cycle.
Okay. I guess the only thing that I look at, and I presume we all do, of course, is that if you have to come back to us, if you don't have the money to finish a project, you should know by this time, and you could transfer it to something else of a priority, and you would let us know by that time, too.
And all of those actions would have to come before
yeah.
this committee as a fund transfer.
And there's nothing here that raises
any There's nothing here that's raising any questions.
Thank
no.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Jersey.
Would you be the person if an audit was being done as the I guess the compliance officer with regard to these capital projects?
I would be involved. I wouldn't be the only person. Our engineering staff that we have on site are the primary oversight of all the capital projects. They are the on-site managers of the various capital
sure.
projects, but from the financial point of view, the answer would be
I'm getting to the financial point of view, and I mean, you know, the person who really follows the borrowing, what's been approved by the board, and how the projects are actually being done, and the money's authorized for them. You're the compliance person for all that, are you not?
Yes, Supervisor.
And I trust in one of the reasons for this report is you bring that back to the board to show your compliance.
Yes.
And I think most of us generally, you know, assume that you're doing a professional job. The main question I have is, is there a person in your office that's being trained to take your place so that this kind of work can continue with some cohesiveness?
Well, Supervisor, Mr. Chair, I don't know that we per se have a succession plan, but I do have an accountant at the accountant 4 level who is the hands-on day-to-day monitoring of all the grants, all the funding, billing all of the funding, or billing all of the funding sources, rather, as the expenditures are incurred, and making sure that that's all working together the way it's supposed to work together, and monitoring the expenditures of each of the projects individually. So
you have
indirectly, I have one person, yes.
Is that person nearing retirement?
No. At least I shouldn't say that. I don't believe so. Let me put it that way.
Because I think these projects and the following of proper procedure, et cetera, I think that's extremely important. And I have become very concerned about succession planning within county government. And these are the kind of reports that give me the most nightmares. If I have to worry about things at night, these are the kinds of stuff I worry about. So I hope we at least look into that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything further on this? If not, this doesn't require any action, correct? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 17 from the Interim Director of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, requesting authorization to perform an administrative appropriations transfer to establish budget authority in Org Unit 1936 by reallocating appropriations from Org 9125. The Committee on Parks, Energy, and Environment approved this on a vote of 5-0.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Supervisors. I'm Laura Schlesser, Chief of Administration and External Affairs for the Parks Department. We are requesting your approval, to the Department of Administrative Services to do an administrative appropriations transfer of money from Org Unit 9125, which traditionally has been known as our North Operations Region, to a new created Org Unit 9136, which we have used as our central region. 9155 is actually a southern region org unit. So to put it simply, we have traditionally, probably over the last 2 years, operated with three regions, a north, a central, and a south. However, budgetarily, the funding for those regions have been separated only in two regions, a north region and a south region. This will actually establish a specific org with funding for the central region. So we're asking your approval to allow DAFS to do that transfer of funds for us.
Move concurrence.
Any questions or discussions? Supervisor Jersey.
Well, and I had staff print up those org units for me, and it looks like the org unit currently for the central unit has all zeros.
That is correct, Supervisor Chairman. This will actually put money into 9136 from 9125.
So really, didn't we have just a north unit and a south unit funded?
Chairman, Supervisors, yes, but the funding that we use for the parks that are considered in our central region, what we're funded in 9125, our north region. This is just a reallocation of the money that was given to us in the 2013 adopted budget.
I'm not sure I understand that explanation. I don't understand why we're doing this. And then you have 9166, which is a separate org unit for O'Donnell. What's happening with that org unit?
Chairman, Supervisors, go back a little bit. 9166, yes, is specifically for O'Donnell. And that is funded separately. That is not part, that is actually out of our recreation division. O'Donnell is run out of our recreation division. What we're looking to do is give our managers in our central region more budget accountability and more transparency. What will help us to track and trend and be able to better prepare budgets in the future by actually taking that money out and appropriately assigning it to the parks within that region, which is why we want to do it that way. Yes, the money is already there. It's in 9125. This is a technical adjustment to allow us to budget more appropriately and to more accurately assign the expenditures and the revenues that come into that org.
I mean, we have an acting director, which hasn't even been brought forward to the board for Parks Division. I question some of these moves. I mean, this is an issue that I have tried to look into ever since I've been on the board, on how you fund North Region, South Region, Central Region, and I actually would like a more thorough explanation. And you know, I'm also, just to be in, Ms. Schlosser, this has nothing to do with you. I have great respect for your work. But this, to me, is just something that I think needs better explanation from an accounting viewpoint as to what you're really accomplishing. And without a director currently in the Parks Department and no clear direction from the administration, I'm going to hesitate to agree to this until we understand in a much better way what we're trying to accomplish here. And I'm going to move layover of this to the call of the chair until we get some of these issues with regards to parks, I think, fleshed out.
Well, it would still come before the board because it went through another committee, correct?
Yeah, it was 401.
Both of them will be reporting it, so...
Well, and maybe we're going to have to address that on the board floor because I wasn't able to be in parks at that time. But I think there need to be more questions, and I don't think parks really did too much other than prove it.
Supervisor Lipson?
Thank you. So to help me understand this, I mean, when the resolution says, you know, that this is to be more accountable and effectively manage the budget, I mean, that's really... internally, I mean, we're not seeing the detail on these. Now, I mean, we see the overall amount allocated in parks, but we don't, at least I don't feel like I've ever seen, somewhere you dug it up, I guess, to see the lower distribution of this. But it really has no effect on, I mean, we're not changing the allocation among parks, we're just sort of how it's recorded in the system. Is that what's going on? Or
Chairman, Supervisors, yes.
I mean, I'd be interested in seeing some of that detail because it would get into some of the questions of equity among different parks or park regions, perhaps. But I don't know that that's the issue in front of us. Now, I think if you were going to start tracking things in more detail and breaking it up, then perhaps that will be available to us at a future time if we make the transition. So I don't know that I would oppose this just on the basis that we haven't had that information before and we could actually get better information. Thank you.
Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to try and offer an analogy here to help relay what's trying to be accomplished here. If you had three legislative assistants working around the clock 24 hours a day and they were each working an 8-hour shift, but you were accounting for your costs for them simply based on AM and PM in two lump sums, you wouldn't be able to get a very valid explanation of, from a managerial standpoint, of what your costs are, who's being efficient, who isn't being efficient, who's doing their job right, etc., when it's looked at from a managerial accounting standpoint. And I would guess that that's what Mr. Kamholz would also back up with more technical language as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Stamper?
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing from Mr. Kamholz.
Right. And you're not changing the 2013 budget at all. The budget stays the same overall as in terms of what you have approved. What this is a reallocation between the north and the central regions so that those counts are funded as you intended proceeds so that when they start expending in the central region, they hit those various accounts. That will allow them to track where they are on expenditure relative to their budget for north, south, and central. If you don't do this, I believe it might be the case that they would deficit in the central region because they'd be expending accounts with no money in there. And overall, the parks would be fine, but it would just look kind of, it would not be allowing for a good tracking device in terms of budget to actual for 2013. So really it's more of a technical issue, and we felt comfortable moving it in front of you guys for just to be out in the open on it.
Just curiosity, is this something that's been tried before? Have you thought to bring this before the board before and it just was denied, or seemed like something you would have wanted to do in the past?
Chairman, supervisors, taxing my memory a little bit, but my estimate, we did operate three regions, and they were they did have three separate orgs approximately 8 years ago. So we were under this model. We shifted to a two-region model, and about 2 years ago we shifted back operationally to a three-region operation system.
Okay, and I assume the one 8 years ago was better.
We have found, Chairman, Supervisors, we have found that for us to prepare our budgets in the most detailed way that we can and to give our managers the tools and the resources they need to do their jobs in their specific units, that this is the best way to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my motion on this. I'm going to get some additional information before board day. For now, I'll vote. I'm going to vote in the negative on this just because I don't like the way it looks with the central region having had zero and budgeting. But I'll withdraw my motion on the layover. And if I do find some additional information that I think colleagues should know about, I'll bring it up before board day.
Thank you. So we had a motion to concur. Okay. Take the roll on the motion.
Supervisor Hoff?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Romo
West?
Aye.
Grosser?
No.
Bickstrom?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Sampler?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to confirm, 8-1.
Thank you.
Item 18 is the 2012 appropriation transfer package.
All
the items in both packets were signed by the county executive. One was a separate date from the rest.
The item number 18 is actually the 2012 fund transfer packet is the last packet for the 2012, I believe. Just to step back where we were earlier when we were talking about the third quarter reports from 2012, the EMU transfer that you cited, Supervisor Jurcik, actually is in the 2013 budget. And given that, there will be no impact from that EMU transfer, irrespective of the share of spending or not, on 2012 results. So I just wanted to make that clarification that the EMU transfer is in the subsequent packet on the next file. And it also would not have any impact on 2012 results.
And then wasn't there a clerical error on page 3? Did we get a corrected version or not?
It should be, it says, in addition, security fee increased by $250,000 due to the increased use of security in the BHD facility. That would make the text correct with what you see in the actual transfer itself. The transfer is correct. The text was incorrect. It cited 150, not 250.
Any questions, Supervisor Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
I think it's correct.
Number 18.
I have a motion to approve. Any further discussion?
What?
Oh, go ahead.
Just so I'm clear, I mean, by approving the transfer, we're really reversing ourselves of putting the electronic monitoring money into the budget to be spent on that purpose, correct?
Right. When we get to that item on item 19 for the 2013 packet, we can discuss that.
Okay.
We're still on 12 packet, and that's not in that item.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, then on item 18, we have a motion to approve. Take the roll.
Supervisor Scott.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
Jurcik.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Bamford.
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to approve is approved 9-0. Item number 19 is the 2013 transfer package.
Most of these transfers are capital transfers. Starting from page 10 on, you will see transfers related to capital project for Gas FM, airport, highways. What those are actually transfers, temporary transfers prior to carryover funds. Carryovers for capital, because capital is not like operating, it carries over for multiple years. Carryovers are completed by June. So what this does is provide temporary transfers for capital projects. Those capital projects can continue on until carryover funds by June. So that's what most of the transfer packet relates to. In addition to this, prior to those pages, there's the EMU transfer, as well as a transfer related to bus shelters. So if you have questions on those, we can take those.
Do you have a question now, Supervisor Jurcik?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you repeat it?
Okay, I think he did answer that question, because in the budget we had approved electronic monitoring unit. And what's the amount, as long as we're talking about that?
The transfer itself is for $657,000. So there's $200,000 in addition to that amount. So the total EMU is about $800,000 in expenditure authority, and it's residing right now in the sheriff's office. We want to move that into the contingency pending the outcome of the bifurcation.
And basically, we're reversing a budgetary action we took.
Correct, in 13.
Any further questions or discussion? Now we need a motion to approve this item.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I have a motion to approve. Supervisor Johnson, would you take the roll on the motion?
On approval, Supervisor Scott.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Como West.
Aye.
Jurcik.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Bamford.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved 9-0. Item number 20, from the Director of Human Resources, submitting recommendations for appropriate classifications and rates of pay for positions created in 2013 adopted budget. This is phase 2.
Anybody have anything to share with us on this?
Thank you.
say anything from the administration?
Yes.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. Just to state, these are the remainder of the additional positions that were approved already by the board during the budgeting process. Once this is approved, there's really nothing else left from that process. Everything's then approved, and we can go ahead and fill these jobs.
Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you. We do understand that. And the situation we get many times is we create positions and in budget form they're never filled. Are we kind of monitoring and redo, or do we get a report on this? Are we presuming we're actively engaged in filling these positions, and any special timelines, any particular area that we should be concerned about, since we put the monies in for all these things? And I know you didn't get everything you wanted, so I'll make that point, but we'll move on for that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors. There are some areas when they went to the budgeting process actually staggered and said, I need these positions, but I'm planning to fill them in March versus May versus August. So there is some staggering that's going on here. They're not all going to be filled right away. There's a lot of eagerness by the managers to get through this step so they can go ahead and move forward and start pulling together a sourcing strategy.
Okay, and my follow-up would be that is this, and you tell me honestly if this is, I'm not trying to, you know, micromanage or be trivial here, but again, this is a big outlay we put and we find, and I know some flexibility is necessary for departments to make their budgets. Sometimes you don't fill positions, that's how we make our budget, so I guess we do understand that. But sometimes we go out on the limb, and if anything is raised, we get blamed for it, of course, because the administration can be zero. And then if we find out, you know, in the next budget, all these positions were never filled, and this was, quotes, a priority for the board, and we stuck our necks out to put these positions in. So is it feasible, is it reasonable to say, you know, halfway through the year, we do get a report saying what positions aren't filled and why? That would be a question I would ask. I don't know if anybody else is interested in that besides myself. For September, yeah. I mean, I don't care. I mean, just as long as we get an idea before the next budget. So, you know, I always look at full-time positions and in budgets when we, you know, if we stay in finance and we continue to look at these things, I mean, a big part of the budget is, well, how many people do you really need to do the job? And then, you know, we want to give departments the ability to do their job for the most part. And we had some budgetary problems. We didn't get everybody and get everything they wanted. Who did? But, I mean, that's the follow-up question I have. I'll just stick with that. Thank you.
If we do annually do a vacant but funded position report, if you want something in addition to that this year, we certainly can do that. It comes out in the middle of the year, but that's one option. If there's something more that you're thinking of, that's one report that's currently a standing report.
Okay. Well, and I know we get the vacancy. I guess I would like something before budget starts, September-wise or something like that, just to get an indication where we are. It doesn't have to be, you know, minutiae and hundreds of hours of work. I would think it'd be fairly simple to put together. Am I wrong?
Something a little closer to the budget.
Plan. Yeah.
Okay.
So, in agreement?
Sure. Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I concur with Supervisor Schmidt's request. I would like that report, even though one is given mid-year, I'd like that report before we receive, but I would like in September. Just so that we can have, because possibly some positions could be filled. We just like to know the scorecard. We'd like to know where things are as far as new creates, both sets of new creates. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Supervisor Drew.
Well,
I agree with Supervisor Schmidt's request as well. We've been left without a department having any staff in it due to sudden layoffs. And, you know, hopefully when you put positions in the budget, you're starting to plan for this succession plan, which is I think, critical. I also understand that it's a possible way of, you know, playing some budget games, if you will. I'm not suggesting that was done. But you put positions in the budget, you budget money for it, and then, you know, you kind of go along through the year and hopefully not reflect deficits perhaps by not filling positions, or if you know you're going to have a good year and surplus looks good, then maybe you can fill positions. I don't know if any of those games are going on, but it's becoming very apparent to me that we need to look at our departments in terms of succession planning, because we have some critical functions in the county that are in jeopardy right now. And we lived through years and years of the Walker budgets where we were constantly, you know, cutting budgets, you know, not raising taxes, which I'm a big fan of. Let's not raise taxes. But then we get to the point where you're really not able to fulfill county functions. So there's some real concerns there, and I think we need to get a better handle on it myself. I actually have asked to do a full audit on succession planning, and we'll still consider preparing that amendment, but maybe Supervisor Schmidt's way of doing it is another way. I think an audit might be a more formal way to do it, so thank you.
Supervisor Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee receive a report from the Director of Human Resources regarding the filling of new positions created in the 2013 budget by September. For September, I should say. That's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Johnson? Along with accepting what we have in front of us?
Yeah, we got to accept that.
Right. We have 13-104 in front of us.
Yes.
And in addition. Motion for approval, and then with the additional stipulation of...
I move approval. Item number 20 with the recommendation.
Any questions or comments on the motion? If not, take the roll.
On approval with the recommendation, Supervisor Hoff.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Omo West.
Aye. Dursick? Aye. Liscomb? Aye. Alexander? Aye. Stanford? Aye. Johnson? Aye. Mr. Chair? Aye. Motion approved, 9-0. Item 21 is the Director of Human Resources requesting authorization to amend Walker County Ordinance 17.10 for advancement, excuse me, within a pay range related to assistant chiefs of airport rescue and firefighting upon meritorious completion of 2,704 straight hour time escape.
Do we have a motion on this?
I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions or discussion? Go ahead.
Could we just get an explanation from HR on this? I mean, we've had some concerns in the past about the fire chiefs at the airport and how all of that is structured. So I'd like to hear why we're doing this.
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors. Currently, the way the ordinance reads, it's saying that employees, after essentially working a full year at full time, are eligible to receive a raise. That we use the 2,080 hours. The unique thing about these individuals, the firefighters, is that they, on average, work a 52-hour work week. So what's happening is right now they're actually hitting that 2,080 hours partway through the year, so they are actually eligible to get a raise every 9 months. And the rest of the county is under the kind of the general one-year time frame. So this really is a way to bring them in line with the way this ordinance, we believe, was intended. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and I am in no way criticizing the firefighters here, but I mean, I assume that the firefighters at the airport, like many firefighters, do have a portion of their on-duty service in which they are sleeping. Is that true?
Sure. I mean, that is true, yeah.
So, I mean, it might make sense to have the ordinance read hours based on waking hours of service.
Not sure if that's track. I'd have to look into that to see if, you know, I think the hours are all put together as, you know, hours worked. I don't think it's differentiated in their payroll.
I'm probably going to create more of a problem than it's worth, so thank you for listening to my 2 cents worth, but I won't make any changes.
Yeah, maybe ensure they sleep with one eye open.
I mean, they are subject to being awakened at any time,
yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about pay raises here, and
But they're not getting them.
They're well paid. Let's take the roll before we...
Thank you. Before I get myself in more trouble.
I'll give them approval.
Okay.
On approval, Supervisor Hopps.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
From the West? Aye. Jersey? Aye. Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander? Aye. Camper?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion
approved.
5-0. Aye. Item number 22. From the Director of the Department of Human Resources, requesting authorization to amend Milwaukee County General Ordinance 17.09, subsection 1 and 2, as it relates to new appointees and new patient reimbursement policy.
Supervisor Smith?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move approval, and I'm sure everyone has seen that, you know, this is the price of doing business a little bit, and also I like the qualifications, if that's the right word, to keep the reimbursement expenses. People would leave prematurely or wouldn't fulfill, a year or two on the job in some areas, so I'm fine with the first thing I would move approval.
Supervisor Lipscomb?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. There's reference to the precedent and the other governments that do this. How does the proposed amount compare to other such policies?
Thank you. We looked at a number of different public sector entities specifically and found a wide range. The lowest number I found in terms of the allowable amount was, I want to say, maybe $3,500 was at the low end. At the high end, there was a county we looked at, it was actually the St. Louis area, where there was no maximum. It was really up to the city manager or the county exec and how the negotiation went. So there was really no, you know, nothing. So it really was a wide range. But we looked at King County, we looked at Hamilton County in the Cincinnati area, St. Louis area. Waukesha County has a policy. The city has a policy. What's unique about theirs is that, and it's about 20 years old, so I don't know, you know, if they've updated it recently, but it's based upon a percentage of the midpoint of the pay range the person's in. So it's all over the map.
Okay. appreciate that. And then the question, I did not understand fiscal note, the $20,000. Specifically, could not understand the meaning of that in the context that it previously said that the department absorbed this, so I didn't understand the reference to, well, I just don't understand the statement. If the departments are each absorbing this within their budget, I don't see where the additional cost not otherwise covered by the allocated contingency account. I don't understand that.
I think we were just trying to be somewhat transparent and putting a number on the number, on the amount of activity that would be involved in. I mean, we don't expect this to be used, excessively. Is this a $500,000 item countywide? Is it a $20,000 countywide? We put a fiscal note on it of $20,000, but yes, you're correct. It would be absorbed within the department. It would not be an addition to, as you noted.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the reference to the allocated contingency account is a reference to the positions in the sheriff's office that we've been recruiting for, the inmate medical positions, and there's money set aside in an allocated contingency account to help in that recruitment. That's what that's a reference to.
Okay. Yeah, that was my amendment, but I don't remember how that would function differently than, I mean, it was broad allocation. It was broad allocation for the recruitment and the salaries and all that. So, I'm sorry, but you're saying it's like any other department, it would be funded within that. It's not an additional expenditure.
Correct. For all other departments, it would be coming out of department budgets for the sheriffs. For those positions, we'd be pursuing through the allocated contingency account.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And just so everyone's clear, these are actual expenses. Receipts would have to be given, and they would be reimbursed.
That's correct.
Do we have a motion?
I do.
Okay. A motion for approval. Supervisor Scott.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Donald West.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion approved, 9-0. We took up item 23, so we are now on item number 24. 24 is from the Director of Department of Human Resources relative to appointments and advanced step of the hearing. This is informational only.
Any questions or comments on this report? If not, then we can move on, I guess. Excuse me?
Yeah, we don't.
No, 20. Mm-hmm.
We're on 24.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, we did talk.
I guess we did 23.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that.
We did 23.
It is. Yeah. So sure. Everybody has a objection.
Yeah.
Okay, item number 25.
Excuse me.
Just one quick question. I mean, we include the some of these physician psychiatrist positions in here. Does this reflect the most recent? I know Judiciary talked about the need to increase that. Does that already include that?
I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
The positions with regard to BHD.
The three major ones.
This represents actual hires or promotions that have occurred already.
So this is only actual hires?
This is, yes.
We're not setting the pay scales for future hires?
No.
At this point. Okay. That answers that question.
Any other questions on item 24? Item 25?
Item number 25 is from the Deputy Director of the Department of Human Resources relative to dual employment, temporary appointments, dual hire classification, temporary appointments, and emergency appointments. There's also information
on that. Ms. Mitchell, I had a question about this, and maybe I should have spoken to you about this prior to this privately, but you have some private sector experience, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Can you just tell us a little bit about your private sector experience?
Where you worked? I worked, prior to working at the county, I worked for a number of years. I'm in the financial services industry at different iterations of U.S. Bank.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me there's been some effort on the part of the administration to move us to sort of a business model, which most people have no real objection to. And I've been informed that there is an ordinance that requires persons, if they're taking a higher position for a temporary time, that they get higher pay. How would that be handled in the private sector for some of these people who are doing a job for a month or two? Say their boss or a coworker who had a little higher pay grade was out on FMLA. Would you expect that person who fills that job to get the pay of the other person, or would the boss just say, Mr. Camels is out for a month? Mr. Katie, you're going to do Mr. Camholz's job, so you're not going to necessarily.
It's much easier.
Would you as the boss expect Mr. Katie to work under his current situation, or if Mr. Camholz was making a higher wage, would you expect him to get Mr. Camholz's wage if you were in the private sector?
Well, thank you for asking. When I started, I found this to be a very unusual practice. Typically what happens, and in my own department I've had this happen where a key position opens, and I just say, I'm just going to pitch in, and I'm going to work to fill this as quickly as I can, and thank you for doing that. It's a good experience. A person can step up, and from a development perspective, it's a good opportunity. The one caveat I would share is that in my prior experience, I worked with a union where if a person were temporarily helping out for a period that was beyond maybe a 90-day period, there was a requirement that they needed to be paid more until that temporary assignment was done. But it was very much on an exception basis. Typically, I've just seen that, you just sort of make do until you get the job filled.
Has the administration, have you looked at, or the county executive, has he made any efforts to attempt to change this policy, especially for, you know, prior to Act 10 non-represented employees?
I can't say that I don't recall the last time we've spoken about this particular policy. There are just a number of things kind of here and there on sort of my list of, yeah, I'd really like to tighten that up or fix it, and this is one of them. I don't know that I can speak. I don't know if there's anyone here from the administration that maybe could speak to his opinion. I sure can't right now, but I would very much support reform in this area. We've already been kind of talking about that in our department. So,
does anybody have any idea how much this costs?
This policy?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Rick Session, Deputy Director of Human Resources. At agenda setting last week, you had asked that sort of question, and we ran just some quick and dirty numbers that on the TAC list you have in front of you, based on the hourly differential between their regular pay and their TAC pay, for the pay period, it would be $10,767. Now, that's an absolute number. It doesn't take into account vacancies or people kind of backfilled underneath, so that's sort of the general impact.
So that's about $10,000 for a two-week pay period?
Correct.
This?
Per pay period.
Okay. Well, I was just curious about this issue, and I thought maybe the county executive, in his zeal for reform, would be making some efforts in this regard. Supervisor Schmidt?
And yeah, I think the point was made. I guess what we always, I always look at it is how long this lasts. I mean, there's always kind of a rule of thumb that's going beyond 6 months, we've gone well beyond a temporary position. And I do notice more than a subtle change is that I don't normally see any of those on here that we've had in the past, you know, going back 6 months or so. And all these are almost, I think they're all 2013. No, there's a couple. There's one in 10. Which is getting on kind of the outside. But is that something we continue to monitor and look at too? Because it's hardly temporary to me if we're going forth for 6 months, and that doesn't seem to be the policy we're establishing here. I don't see anything like that. Can you speak to that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We do keep track of the tax and how they roll to make sure that we're in compliance with the ordinances. You know, as you know, the director can extend a tax, and then beyond that, the board needs to authorize the extension of the tax. So we do monitor what comes up.
But I haven't seen any 6 months or more lately. Have we had anything like that?
Well, I think they're reflected on here under the extension column.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see something where there's an administrative extension. There's the first one on here, for instance, is a board action extension. So there are some that are in excess of 6 months.
Yeah. I guess it might as well take a little latitude to make the point. I think we were all concerned about is that people, you know, put in positions and moving forward to picking directors. I mean, we read in the paper, or now you put something in for the parks for a national search for a parks director. Can that be confirmed from your office, too?
Confirmed by director.
As far as, yeah, absolutely, that is true.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm fine. Thank you.
So just to clarify what you said, Mr. Sessions, so the in this report, the ones that say yes under extension, that means they've already been doing this? Am I reading that correctly?
Under the extension column?
EXT? Where it says EXT, that's the extension column, right?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chairman. And the first one on here was authorized by the board and that file number. The others are administrative extensions at this point, and they would need to get board approval for further extensions.
So that, just so that I'm understanding this report, and sorry to spend so much time on this, but so the one that's the start date says 12/14/12, but then it says extension yes, the very first one, correct? Am I looking at the right page?
I'm on the right page.
I'm on page. Oh, I'm on 241. I'm on this. Doesn't have a number.
244.
I'm looking at the very last page then.
That's 244.
Okay. Top of page 244.
Got it.
Start date 12/14/12. Yes. And then end date 2/14/13.
I don't see the one you're referring to. We did issue a revised version of this report.
It's a child support specialist.
child support specialist. Okay, thank you.
So when you say start date 12/14/12, correct. Extension yes, does that mean that person has already been doing this prior to 12/14?
Correct.
Is there some way we could have the report reflect what the actual start date of this, you know,
sure.
to get to some of Supervisor Schmidt's yeah. questions? So we don't really know how long that person's, based on this report, we don't know how long that person's been filling that job, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, right. Based on this report, we don't. Right. Okay. It would just be helpful. I mean, if there was going to be any sort of attempt to, I think, if anybody from the administration was going to try to do something with this policy, I think you'd have to have, we'd probably want the information on how often, how long this person was doing that. Well, anyway, sorry to belabor that. Any further questions on this? Yep, go ahead.
Chairman, I'm trying to understand your point. I think I know what you're saying. I want to make sure I'm clear. What are we trying to find out?
And this last one?
Just in general.
In general, I guess what I was wondering is, it would seem that in a lot of work situations, if your coworker was gone and maybe the coworker had some little higher duties than you did and made a little more money, and your coworker, say, was out on FMLA, and your boss came to you and said, "Mr. Stamper, you're going to do Deanna's job for the next month while she's gone," and you would probably say okay, and they wouldn't say, "By the way, you're going to get her pay," you know, I mean, just sort of, as she said, sort of pull together. And so I was wondering if there was a way, especially at higher levels and sort of the traditionally non-represented people, that if somebody's gone for a month or two, if we don't just pull together and do, you know, everybody do their job. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was getting at. And then as to this report, it's not clear when the person actually started underfilling that job.
Okay, yeah. I have to see that.
What was the answer to the question?
What was the answer to why it doesn't show that start date?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that question. It just seems like the way they do it.
Sorry.
Why
doesn't show the real start date?
You never got your answer.
Because, I mean, I don't know most of these people, but we all know the interim directors. And we know that they didn't just get tacked in November or January, so they've been in those for 6 months or more.
Excellent. So, to the chairman's point, we will add that field in the next report. There was a requirement in the ordinances that we only report. The only requirement in the ordinance is that we report on non-represented positions that are tagged. And the report you have here, we include all the positions that are tagged, but it doesn't give us any other parameters, so we'll add that to the report.
Okay.
Was that a sufficient answer? Not particularly.
Sure.
I mean,
I understand that. I don't know why wouldn't, Mr. Chairman,
I don't
have the actual start date, not the start date of the.
I thought it might have been a payroll thing or something like that. I don't really know.
That's all I thought it was.
Easy to add.
But I do appreciate that it shows more than they were technically required to show. Because I would think that a tax report would have all tax people.
Okay. Anything further?
Sure.
Next item?
Item number 26, the Director of Architecture, Engineering, and Environmental Services, Department of Administrative Services, requesting authorization to enter into a memorandum of understanding with Milwaukee County Research Park Corporation to allow Milwaukee County to perform research park-relating work for research park related to the newly created capital project for the research park entrance signage, landscaping relocation, and after expenses reimbursed by the research park. The Committee on Economic Community Development approved this on a vote of 5-0.
Mr. Hine?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, this report requests your approval for Architecture, Engineering, and Environmental Services to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Milwaukee County Research Park to allow us to plan, design, and bid and deliver a research park entrance signage landscaping relocation project. The project is a part of the remediation of the zoo interchange reconstruction. During that process, there are two entrances to the research park, one on Highway 100, one on Watertown Plank Road. Both of those will be altered by the zoo interchange reconstruction. The research park has received money in settlement from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for both of these areas. One of them is they've already received the $450,000 to restore that intersection. I think that's the one on Watertown Plank. The one on Highway 100 has to do with private properties that are within the research park. That money they have not received, but anticipate receiving that money soon. What we need to do from their perspective, they asked us to get the planning and design going so that during the summer when the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is doing their work on these two entrances, we can be getting the planning and design and bidding done for the restoration of the landscaping and signage that is on the outside the right-of-way work that the Department of Transportation will be doing. This allows for us to do that work. It allows for a creation of a capital project to allow us to hire a contractor and pay them. So this report recommends approval of a resolution that authorizes DAS, Corporation Counsel, and Risk Management to negotiate, prepare, review, and approve, and execute all record and record all documents and perform all actions required to enter into this MOU with the research park so that we can perform this work. It also directs research park to reimburse the county for all project-related expenses, and it further directs DAS Fiscal to process an additional administrative fund transfer for the balance of the project once research park has deposited the additional funds into a segregated account for the purpose. Do you have any questions?
Supervisor Trent.
Thank you. I was in came in for transportation just for a bit. The only comment I wanted to make, and I do want to make a motion to concur with economic development, but I do want to make a quick statement too, just as a point of reference here. I think we appreciate what Mr. High does. He's always comes of course prepared and has done an excellent job as many of the people out here. But someone who maybe hasn't got some credit, and I'd like to throw a little credit out. We certainly brought in Sue Black, the board did. We appreciated the many, many contributions she made, especially for public-private partnerships, bringing money in that we didn't have in her budget. I think Mr. Busalaki, by the way, did just a terrific job in this area, his former association being in the State Department of Transportation. And other people have picked up the ball since then, so I'm not, saying he was the sole person here, but we looked on in transportation, it's pretty common knowledge that the DOT, for all the improvements, all the infrastructure, moving the greenhouses, there's other things on the other side of the street, all these county grounds and research park on the other side of the street, but they were originally talking about, Mr. High, you could help me in numbers, maybe $4 million or so to the state to help us in all those transfers and moving greenhouses, moving roads. It's one boulevard across, goes through the southwest section. We've got some 20-some million dollars, and I'd like to think that, I think the fact that he was negotiating for us a large amount have brought some of those negotiations because of my involvement with county grounds, but that's someone maybe he'd be listening sometime to thank for all he did and help us get the monies we really needed and deserved to do these kinds of things that the state DOT, and they're changing all these things because it's a state project and the zoo interchange is a major project we all appreciate, but it directly impacts our four quadrants out there, the county grounds, and I think we've moved towards things to initially a lot of legwork and this association with the state DOT and Mr. Busalaki deserves some credit for this. Would you agree, Mr. Knight?
Supervisor Chairman, yes.
Thank you. Much more terse than I am.
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, he was let go too. That's right.
So do we have you already made a motion, didn't you, Supervisor?
I did.
Okay. Any more questions or discussion? Now, can you take the roll on the motion?
Motion to concur with UCB. Supervisor Scott. Schmidt.
Aye.
Bonolet.
Aye.
Director Fisher.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Danforth.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved, 9-0 to concur.
Before we would go into closed session, I know there's been some discussion about item 28 and possibly Mr. Grady being able to give us an update on our pending court cases in open session, and then if we have questions, we can go to closed session, and that would be so the public would have a little bit more idea of what's going on with some of these court cases without jeopardizing our position at all. Does anybody have any objection to Mr. Grady giving us sort of a public update that anything he deems is appropriate for public consumption?
Mr. Chairman, just a point. We have talked about this as a committee. I remember making some kind of request a number of months ago, and this has been talked about. You know, we will find out that a great majority is, and maybe it always happens this way, is involved with the sheriff. You know, it's an area of a lot of suits over the years. But would it be appropriate now, or to get out, to ask, as other people have asked about this, I certainly have, if we could get some kind of rough number, at least, and the amount of suits and what the total expenditure so far from Milwaukee County is in the area of the Sheriff's Department and the lawsuits that we have.
I think it's appropriate to ask that, and it seems you're already taking notes, so... So no one has any objection to Mr. Grady giving us an update before we go to closed session, then we can discuss them specifically in closed session if we need to. So Mr. Grady, you can respond to, if you want, to his question, and then just start talking about item 28.
So I can read the item, please, Mr.
Chair? Sure, go ahead.
Number 28 is from the Corporation Counsel submitting an informational monthly report providing an update on the status of pending litigations. This went to judiciary also, and they took no action on the file.
Mr. Chairman, just to respond to Supervisor Schmidt's question, the only question I have in response is the time frame. How far back do you want to go? And as I understand the request, he wants to know essentially what the county has spent. I'm assuming that doesn't include just, you know, personnel time, which we can't probably calculate, but what the county spent in hard dollars, either paying settlements or judgments for the sheriff or paying outside counsel for the sheriff for cases involving the sheriff. And the only question would be, how far back do you want me to look?
Maybe you and Supervisor Schmidt could sort of talk privately and come up with a reasonable date as to when you start third day.
I'm fine with that. With respect to what we're doing now, I just wanted to say that this was an idea that came out of Judiciary Committee, because I provide the same update to that committee, and one of the supervisors there suggested that we try to do some of it in open session, and I have no problem doing that. I think the suggestion is that I provide an update in open session of public comments, and then if you have any kind of strategic or privileged kind of questions, we would obviously go into closed session for that. So with that, I'm not going to discuss every case. I give you a list, and just to clarify, this list is not a list of all the cases in our office. It's not even close to a fraction of the cases in our office. It's the ones we think that as policymakers you will find most interesting or are of large size in terms of dollar value. And so I'll just real quickly go through the highlight the ones that I think are of interest this particular month. Just real briefly on the first case, this is a lawsuit brought a while back by the union, AFSCME. It relates to the passage of Act 10 and whether, because of the passage of Act 10, AFSCME employees for purposes of the Rule of 75 effectively became non-represented employees on the date that Act 10 was passed or enacted. And therefore, whether any AFSCME employees hired between 1994 and 2006 who were not previously eligible for the Rule of 75, therefore became eligible for the Rule of 75 because of the difference in dates for non-reps and union employees. And we are in the middle of briefing a motion for summary judgment on that case, and hopefully within a few months we'll have a decision, at least from the circuit court, on that issue. The case, of course, if Act 10 is unconstitutional and is thrown out of court by the appellate courts, and would render this case moot, because then obviously nothing happened when Act 10 was passed. And so this case is premised on the notion that Act 10 is in fact constitutional, even though obviously the unions are fighting the claim about that in a different form, in a different way. It's just kind of an odd situation. I've also regrouped these cases. So you'll see, for example, number three, we have several cases that relate to changes the county has made on retiree health care for co-pays and deductibles. The lead case on that is the first one, the Hussey case. That case was in federal court. The county won that case in federal district court. The judge found that the county was within its authority to make changes to co-pays and deductibles for retirees, that the only promise that was made to retirees was that they had premium-free insurance on the same terms as active employees. That case is now on appeal to the Seventh Circuit. There are several other cases underneath that that are what I call copycat cases that make the same claim that are all basically stayed by agreement of the parties waiting for the first one to be resolved. The second group of cases is the number four. These are Medicare Part B premium reimbursement cases. In that case, we lost in circuit court, state circuit court. The judge found that the elimination of reimbursement of Medicare Part B premiums was unconstitutional or a violation of the benefit contract that employees have. We have, through the county board's permission, appealed that case. The other ones are, again, copycat cases that are waiting for that case. Number five are a series of cases related to the pension multiplier. The first case was brought by the nurses union, and the circuit court judge found that the county was wrong by changing the multiplier for current employees. No question we could do it for new hires, but we were wrong for doing it for current employees. Again, we have received permission and have appealed that case to the Court of Appeals. All three of these series of cases, number three, four, and five, are being handled by outside counsel through the insurance company. I'm going to skip to number 10. That case involves the O'Donnell Park accident and the claims of the injured parties and the young man who was killed, as well as the county's claims for the repair of the structure and the revenue lost while the structure was closed. We went through a series of very complicated motions in front of the circuit court with what's called the statute of repose and the statute of limitations. The upshot of that is several of the contractors were dismissed from the case. Several are still in the case. Our main claim on behalf of the county is against Advanced Cast Stone. That claim remains in the case and it was going forward. The current activity in this case is the defendants and the parties have, some of them have filed requests for the Court of Appeals to appeal that particular issue now rather than waiting for the circuit court action to be done through the trial. So there will be briefing on that. The Court of Appeals will tell us whether they're going to take that now as an early appeal. And then, depending on what happens with that, we'll either have a trial or we'll continue the appeal. We were recently, just for information, required to file our claim for damages in the case, and the approximate claim for damages on behalf of the county is $6.9 million. That includes all the repair costs, all of our lost revenue.
Sorry. You said the appeal of that issue, you're saying the issue of whether we're part of the case?
No. The appeal relates to which defendants remain in the case and which do not. Our claim is in the case right now under all the rulings against Advanced Cast Stone, but Dietz Engineering and C.D. Smith were dismissed as to some of the parties. And again, it has to do with statute of limitations for bringing a claim under a breach of contract. Statute of repose is a special statute that says that with exceptions, you can only bring an action for improvement to real estate within 10 years following substantial completion of the real estate, and we're clearly beyond that now. There are exceptions related to fraud, misrepresentation, and some other grounds, and those were the ones the Circuit Court applied to allow the action to continue and on some of the defendants, and so that's part of the issue on appeal. The rulings have an effect on our case partially, but our main claim is against Advanced Cast Stone, and that is going forward. So it is rather complicated. The briefs probably stack a couple feet tall on the issues. So number 11 is the Christensen Decree case related to medical care and population limits in the jail. We recently had a status conference with the court to talk about that, but frankly, I think most of my comments on that should be saved for closed session. I think I'm just going to skip to the end. Number 18 is a new case on the list, just to let you know about it. It's a deputy who assaulted an individual who's in custody of the back of a squad car in the Sallyport, I think, and the deputy has since been discharged, and this is a lawsuit out in federal court against us for his conduct while he was a deputy. That's a fairly new case. Again, that case is going to be handled by outside counsel, again, through the mutual. The last case I wanted to mention that is not on this list, I want to go back to number 17. 17 is the lawsuit the sheriff filed to get into the House of Correction transition, and the status of that is that there is a scheduling conference in front of the judge next week. And at that point, we hope to have a schedule from the judge in terms of what I assume will be motions to dismiss, motions to resolve the case. I'll have a better idea next cycle on exactly what that schedule will be. The last case I wanted to mention is not on the list, but has been in the media, is the Prude case, the Neutraloaf case. As you may have read in the newspaper accounts, that case was transferred from our office to outside counsel last summer through the mutual. Outside counsel handled that case up until the trial that was coming up, and we had been asking, the county had been asking Aramark and its insurance company, because Aramark is the vendor who produces this food and has the contract with the county, to come in and defend the county under its contractual obligation and under the insurance company's obligation, Aramark's insurance company's obligation. We were not getting any response from them, yes or no, for months. On the Friday before the trial was to begin, the insurance company for Aramark went straight to the plaintiff's attorneys without our notion, without our involvement or knowledge, and settled the case with the plaintiff's attorneys. And so the trial was off. We were prepared to defend the case with the sheriff's office. We intended to defend the case with the sheriff's office, but Aramark's insurance company settled with the plaintiffs. We are now asking Aramark's insurance company to pay all of our defense costs. If they're going to accept the defense of this case, then they should have done it last summer, and they owe us for the defense costs that we have incurred. Now, the county, this is covered by the mutual, so it's really the mutual that's asking for this, but we are asking them to do that. We don't have a response yet, but we've asked. I think that's it for my comments.
So, anybody have any questions that can be asked in open session? If not, we'll go to closed session soon.
Okay.
Thank you. Can we have a motion to go to closed session? Supervisor Hopps.
Closed session. Mr. Grady, approve of this. Do you think this is appropriate for us to go into closed session to discuss this matter, Mr. Grady?
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the litigation update, it is certainly appropriate to discuss the litigation with your counsel in closed session for the reason given in the agenda. I'm assuming, perhaps improperly, that you're also going into closed session for the collective bargaining, which is also appropriate for the preceding item on the agenda.
Correct. Item 27 and 28.
Yes.
I move to go to closed session.
Is that enough of a motion, or do we need to enunciate all the sections?
Well, I think if you just note that it's the reasons, for the reasons the statutory sections listed in the agenda.
So this committee may adjourn into closed session under provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.85, 1 E and G for the purpose of the committee deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of both properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business, whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. For the purpose of the committee may receive oral or written and legal advice, written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to possible pending litigation with regard to the following matters. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene an open session to take whatever actions it may be necessary.
We have a vote on the motion. Thank you.
Motion for closed session. Supervisor Thomas.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Homo West.
Aye.
Griffith.
And just be clear, Mr. Grady gave us the...
Yes.
Aye. Griffith.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved to go into closed session.